It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Anacco, Renee Richie here. Mike Hurley from Relay.fm joins us. We will talk, about the Apple Watch. I might even buy one during the show. The MacBook changes to iOS and OS 10 and a whole lot more. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 456, recorded Tuesday, May 26th, 2015. Buff it out. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Trunk Club. Have the wardrobe you've always dreamed of, handpicked by your own personal stylist. Go to trunkclub.com/twit and join Trunk Club today for free. And by LegalZoom. If you're looking to get a trademark, copyright, or provisional patent application or more, LegalZoom can help you get started the right way. LegalZoom, not a law firm, but can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW in the referral box at checkout this month for a special discount. And by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. With one simple integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay, period. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions, fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news.
When there is much Apple news to talk about today, we welcome to the panel, as always, Mr. Andy Anacco. I may say as always, but we are thrilled that each and every time I turn to my left and I see your smiling face.
I'm just very grateful for this weekly scheduled 2 hours in which I know that I have to be able to use my words. And from the safety of not having a physical face-to-face interaction with the human, I still get a chance to test out the social software. It's like an air raid siren. I don't like to be able to use my social software, but occasionally you just gotta blow that horn to make sure it's still working. And this is my chance to keep the larynx, the tongue, everything like limbered up and in good operation case.
So Paul Schaefer. I need to shout. Paul Schaefer said he's going to miss the fact that he used to know exactly what he was going to be doing every day at 4 p.m.
You have to take a shower once a day.
Right. Hey, that's Renee Richie, iMore.com. Great to see you, Renee. New haircut.
Thank you, Leo. Yeah, new shave. I shaved my beard because I couldn't compete with Mike. But I also want to thank and congratulate Andy on his new title of Chief Sideburn Officer.
Those better never go away, Andrew.
I've got it. Well, actually, I did a few months ago the rookie move of the beard trimmer that I use that usually has like the attachment that like keeps the sideburns the right length. I had removed it so that I could like do some other grooming, forgot to put it back on, and then 2 days later just zoop. So this is what it's like without sideburns for the first time in 20 years. We'll see how that works.
Fortunately, you're hirsute enough that it didn't really.
I think during a commercial, I'm going to have to go up. I forgot to shave this morning. I look like a bum, and I'm going to have to.
We need to do a hair.
I don't feel as though I have the credit. I have the credibility of. It's they're like Renee is fine because Steve Jobs is fine. There are these people that like the stubble makes them look dashing. I just look like look who decided he'd much rather sleep an extra 6 minutes in the morning rather than.
You got a Wolverine thing going on, Andy. Total Wolverine thing going on.
I love it.
And my black stainless steel arrived.
Oh, I know. Let me introduce Mike, and then we'll talk about it. Sir. Speaking of beards. Mike Hurley is here from Relay.fm. Hey, Mike.
Hello. It's great to be back. Thank you so much for having me today.
Mike with a Y. You Brits don't... You have a new... You call ZZ. You don't have a strange way of saying Y, do you?
Ye? No, we don't.
Mike with a ye.
It's just a Y.
As well get the whole alphabet while you're at it.
Yeah.
Why just one letter?
It is Oz.
Okay, thanks.
It's the Romans.
It is ours, you know. Why is it just that like Americans say Z and every other English-speaking culture in the world says Z? Why is that?
Cultural deviance.
Do you say Z in Canada too, right?
Yeah, and we have a U after our O. It's like all good-hearted, colorful people.
What is? Actually, I know about the U's. That really goes back to the days of the founding fathers, where they decided we are not going to do it the way those Brits do it. Who was it?
They kept PHs, but they got rid of U's. It's a very strange language.
Yeah. Well,
We're not Zeds, but I use Zed a lot because Z, frankly, is ambiguous a little bit sometimes when you say it. Could be an E. Could be I just fell asleep.
Zed's dead, Leo.
Zed is dead. Johnny Ive kicked upstairs, chief design officer. The announcement was, I think, originally made by Stephen Fry in an interesting but quite discursive article in on the Telegraph. And then a memo came out from Tim Cook, confirming that. Johnny Ive is now chief design officer. Not sure how that – well, I guess he doesn't do hands-on because –
got rid of his managerial duties.
Yeah, that's yeah. – All the stuff that I've read indicates that it's more of a now he can just be this free floating cloud of design that descends that floats over the entire planet of Apple stuff, including retail, and just simply descends to rain design upon something and doesn't have to like, oh, and now we need someone needs their 1099 countersigned. Yeah, there's other people who can do that now. It's just basically how many times should the fork in the new Apple cafeteria on spaceship campus be right now?
There was like three really different reactions. One from the people who were optimistic was, wow, he's finally ascending. He's shedding all those managerial duties he doesn't like, and he can focus entirely on design. The pessimists were like, well, this is his first foot out of the door. He's giving over his responsibilities. He's not going to be at Apple forever. And then the analysts were like, oh, super clever way for Apple to hide his salary because he has no management duties.
Oh.
Policymaker, and there's no disclosure needed under FCC guidelines.
Oh, that's an interesting twist on all of that.
Yeah.
Richard, what was his, do you know what his salary is until July 1st?
They haven't reported it since 2009, even though it looks like they should have because he had managerial duties when he was promoted to senior vice president. And there was, I forget what it was, but one of the people on Forbes was saying that there was probably negotiation going back and forth with the FCC saying, sorry, the FEC. SEC, yeah. Saying that, well, you have him on your corporate front page and that's not matching your disclosure statements. And he does have all these direct reports and that's not matched. And that is a policymaking job. And maybe they decided to move him out before that became an issue.
Why hide it? Is it because it's like $40 million?
It's competitive information. They said it's like the highest paid trader at a hedge fund. He's not an officer of the company, but he's one of the most valuable assets of that company.
You don't need to know what Johnny makes to know that Johnny is critical to Apple. He's just as poachable now as ever.
Yeah, but no one has a number to offer him.
But who could poach him? Right, Mike?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's the name of money. Like, the guy probably owns quite a chunk of stock in Apple, so the money is just going to build forever. But you've got to have there has to be a reason that he would want to join your company. And as a designer, what better job is there than his?
Disney or Lego? Yeah.
I've heard some interesting
Lego
talk.
No, I don't see Johnny Ive.
Oh, well, that's the ultimate thing. You talk about quick turnaround prototyping. There's Lego and there's nothing else.
These are the thinnest bricks we've ever made. Richard Howarth will become VP of Industrial Design. That means he's hardware design. He's part of the original iPhone team. This concerns me a little bit more. First of all, I was concerned when they say Johnny was in charge of software. That worried me a little bit. Alan Dye is now going to be VP User Interface Design. That's both desktop and mobile devices. That's software. That's
he's
the guy who did the fabulous Apple Watch UI. Being sarcastic.
iOS 7. Yeah, he was brought over from marketing, which is why there was all that hubbub at the time about marketing taking over. But he was doing marketing design at Apple, and he moved over. Greg Christie was the longtime head of design at Apple, and he started phasing himself out. He was more of the Steve Jobs skeuomorphic era and originally pioneered the iPhone interface and all those things. And as Christie and Baz, I'm forgetting his last name, Erling, started winding down, Alan Dye started moving in, and he was working with Johnny on this new, flatter, simpler, more Retina-friendly design.
Well, I'm not against that. I think that's all good. But do you think that maybe it's just me. Do you think the Apple Watch is a paragon of incredible software UI design?
It's an experiment. I would say it's a playground right now.
Yeah.
Well, it shouldn't for $400 minimum. It shouldn't be a playground. But it's interesting to look at some of the history behind these guys. Alan started off in just in fashion design. He was I forget what brand it was for, but he was a high end sort of accessories maker. He started at Apple in 2007, and he was working exclusively pretty much on iTunes and the iPod. If you're getting started on the iPod in 2007, you were definitely being slotted in on the top products to start off.
Well, he did the box for the iPhone.
Yeah,
let's be clear. He did the box.
But I, you know, in every single unboxing video I've done, most of them are tongue in cheek.
It's a good box.
Because I think boxing videos are ridiculous. But every time you look at the packaging that anything that Apple makes comes in, it's like here is the box for Apple Watch, and the corners are completely sharp. You can't. Every time I open up a box, it's like, look how tightly this is fitted and how long it takes to get gravity to simply drop the thing off of the out of the container. This is just beautiful. Like I'm really not a fan of the Apple takes sure that the other side of the fence is painted just as well. As I'm not a fan of that statement, but there are times where you see, man, they put so much work and effort into just how nicely this box is going to be, given that it's going to be your first introduction to this thing you've just paid a lot of money for. That's pretty cool. Where was the story about how I think it was for the first iPhone boxes that they wanted, it's a black interior and they couldn't make like the joins on the inside. There was always going to be some exposed paper that caused this tiny little seam of not black. And so they had all those seams hand painted because they didn't want that thing to be anything other than black.
You know, I'm mad about the watch though, because remember, one of the things Apple's been big on is reducing waste. And now you showed the sport, but the stainless and gold come with a ridiculous. The stainless comes with a plastic box that is absolutely not recyclable. I mean, it's exactly the opposite. It's beautiful packaging. I'm not saying that, but it is not reducing.
It's not disposable. If you're charging that kind of money for a watch, it's crazy stupid.
I just threw out my plastic box. What am I going to do with that?
Well, I mean, even the sport model, that's
a charger built in.
This is just the outer sarcophagus, and then you go inside here. I mean, again, it's in my unboxing video, which I haven't posted yet, but it's like King Tut was not packaged as extravagantly as this thing was.
But it's wasteful.
It's a perception of value, Leo.
Well, okay, you can also say that $900 for a gadget watch with a $150 watch
band. That's true.
That's kind of wasteful too. Yeah,
he was a Kate Spade, by the way. Here's our
yes.
It's so smooth, you could just sleep on it. It would be a nice pillow.
I'm serious. Like, as I'm like unpacking this, I'm thinking, I need to find something that I own that's this shape.
I know.
That is the perfect set. Like tennis balls or something, or like squash balls.
I kept mine for almost a month. And finally, this morning, we had two of them, recycled it, because I thought, it's just sitting in my office. It's not doing anything.
I bet you could have sold it, Leo. I'm not even joking.
The box?
I bet if you put that up for sale, someone would have bought the box. I'm not joking.
Anyway, he was at Kate Spade, and he did, and I think you'll be glad to see this. Unless this is an ad, he designed the Molson Beer logo, Mr. Rene Ritchie. Now, how do you feel?
I feel 10% happier. American can be made for 12.
He was at Olgavi and Mather in their brand integration group. He was at Landor Associates, which is here in San Francisco, and that's where unless that's just a small the division.
I've heard nothing but really good things about him, especially at his recent role in Apple.
But I wonder, how does physical design, and admittedly, he's great at boxes and Molson logos, but how does that help you with UI? UI, I'm sorry, I'm an old-fashioned guy. UI is a very specific kind of design that is not the same thing as designing industrial artifacts. It is software. And Apple, by the way, was born. The DNA of Apple is this. Started with the Mac OS UI guidelines that were really great. I mean, really specific. And they've drifted far, far away from those.
If you go back further, though, Leo, it was Steve Jobs' fascination with typography. And I know I started off in print design before I went into digital design. I know Mark Edwards from Bajango was in print design first. There's a lot of people who bring their love of typography and design and layout and white space and all these things and just express it in a digital medium. And I think
that's fine.
Part of what Johnny wanted was that sort of a take on iOS.
That's fine. And it's great for static documents. But UI design is not static documents. It is something very special.
There would be people who are saying that design is design, that the basic principles
mostly designers.
Well, Well, or professionals who work in that job. The fact that they're not simply dictating how something is going to look, but they're working hand in hand with engineers that at that level, at that corporate level, have been designed to simply push back at any bad ideas. Given that every designer has a lowercase engineering qualification on their business card, and every engineer has a lowercase design qualification on his or her business card, it's you're basically looking for someone who thinks the right way as opposed to someone who has the right tech sort of product development in their portfolio. Once they get to Apple, they're going to have to relearn how corporate structure and how product development works anyway. You may as well get a brain that's already round that's going to fit in that round hole.
Look, nobody complains about Apple's typefaces or use of white space.
San Francisco.
In fact, we're going to talk about that in a second. But I have, in the last few years, been very unhappy with Apple's direction with UI. I feel like it's gone the wrong way. By the way, Andy just sent me a link to a original packaging box only eBay listing. $50. I just threw out $100 worth of boxes.
Well, the stainless steel one, Leo. That's probably $200.
Yeah, is
it too late to recall the recycling bin?
There hasn't been any bids on that one, but I'm continuing to do searches, and here's one that there's already four bids up to $10. Here's another one
buy the box.
It's free money.
People are fans of Apple. And it's
I
cool
should have
box.
Wrapped them up and given the empty boxes to my kids for Christmas.
the one thing you can definitely say, you will unlike the contents, you will definitely be able to use that box in 2 years. So maybe it's the better value.
So am I wrong? Mike, let me ask you, am I wrong? Does Apple's UI design really has it gone downhill? Is it less usable than it was in the early 1984 Mac? For instance, I'll give you an example and then you can answer. I'm not through talking. There was a concept, and this, by the way, came from early research, Alan Kay and others at Xerox PARC and SRI, in something they called it monotony. The idea that there should be one and only one way to do everything because the brain paths learn that way and everything will be easier. And that operating, and this is what, to me, one of the reasons I preferred OS X to Windows, because in Windows is exactly opposite. There should be 53 different ways of doing anything, and many of them would involve abstruse keystrokes. The idea that there was this pure path, modal dialogues were eschewed because modality meant it stopped you from being able to work. And all of those things, I think, have been thrown out completely. All right, now you may speak. I'm sorry. I had to get up on my soapbox. I feel like it's not as easy to use as it was.
I think it's difficult as these products are getting a lot more complex and that maybe it's time that Apple relooked at some things. I know from a taste perspective, I don't like the transparency stuff in Yosemite. I turn that off. That's just not something that I like. I do like the overall look of iOS 7/iOS 8. I think that is nice to look at, and I find easier to, maybe not necessarily to understand.
But you misunderstand me. I'm not debating the look, the typeface choice, the buttons. I'm debating usability. That's where I think affordance. They fall down. Affordance. Thank you. That's the word.
I think it's just a lot more complex now.
Yeah.
And I think that is a user experience and user interface problem. And I think that is something that is difficult to fight because we want more from our devices, which means they will get more complex. And I guess part of it is in the decisions that are made. And it might be down to individual users and the way that they like to do things and the types of controls and settings that they want to have. I don't know. It is difficult. It is more difficult, but I think it's going to naturally be more difficult if these things get more powerful.
I'll grant you that. I mean, that's why it's so important to have good UI designers, because you have to look at what Microsoft did with the ribbon. I mean, Office became so complicated that people were only using 5% of the features because they didn't even know they existed. And then they did this ribbon thing, which is debatable whether that was good or bad.
Now it's hamburgers and basements for everybody.
Yeah. You use the word affordance. What is what? Can you define that, Renee?
Yeah, so Fortinet is a user interface term, and it means like the action is hinted by what it is. For example, a doorknob, you look at it, you know to turn it. It's got a high level of affordance. With the original versions of iOS, they also wanted a very high level of affordance. So the slide to unlock, nobody knew really what that was. So they made this big graphical groove and put a big slider on it so that it looked like a real world object. That's how skeuomorphism came about too. They made it look like what it would do in the physical world because that hinted how you should react to it. You should touch this button and slide it along the groove. Now in iOS 7 and subsequently 8, they believe that we're now digitally, there's this whole theory about digitally native and digital immigrants, and you have to move people from newspapers and books to things like tablets and phones. But now they're saying that more people are either have moved over or are just born into this age, and they don't need to be told how to swipe to unlock. It's just one of the natural actions that they'll perform while they're picking up and touching something and playing with it and discovering things. And this is a huge argument inside Apple, inside the design world, about what level of affordance, because you don't want to make it childlike or childish or like, you know, like Game Center maybe used to be, but you don't want to make it too difficult for someone who is a beginner to pick up and use immediately because their brain just understands how it should be used.
Andy, it sounded like you had some thoughts there.
Only that I think that Apple's in a kind of an unusual situation in which they're not like they're not building their products the way that Google is trying to deploy Android towards multiple platforms. They're not like Microsoft that's finally trying to unify the Windows experience across multiple devices. They really do want to have a consistent language that they can apply to everywhere. Something that really got promoted a lot on social media was they're making the design book for the New York subway system. That when they redesigned the subway system, I think it was in the 60s, maybe, that they're going to have all the signage be completely consistent. And they had to make sure that no matter where these instructions are, whether it's on a post, whether it's on a printed material, whether it's on something like that, it has to be consistent so that every time someone sees this language, they don't know what the content is, but they know what it's related to. And they know that that's where they're going to get their information from. I think that Apple's facing the exact same problem where they're not as disposed as other companies are to say, well, this is a watch, so we're going to have to make it more. We're going to do something special for the watch, or we're going to do something special for the iPad, or we're going to do something special for our desktop interface. We really want to have one language that's consistent across so many different experiences that it's hard to optimize for any one sort of device. So there are areas in which I agree with you. I'm on day, I think, 12 or 11 of using the Apple Watch, and there's still some basic user interface elements that I feel as though I don't understand. I think I'm still learning the language of what the user interface wants to tell me and how I should say things back to it. But it's a large scale problem. And I think that it's not good. I really do think that Apple is going to have to keep their head down and make a whole bunch of mistakes before they can solve it. It's only when they put these things out in front of millions of people and they figure out, here's what people are not reacting to. Here is what people are picking up immediately. Well, I mean, just to wind it up, I mean, I'm amazed that Apple has put so much attention towards the digital crown. And I could definitely see, again, in that three-ring binder that explains the design process of why they decided to make this part of the language, it makes perfect sense. But nonetheless, I almost never use it. For me, it's just a clicky button that takes me to the app launcher because every time I want to scroll something, I'm always doing this because that's what I do on all these other devices that I own.
You're scrolling it wrong.
Yeah, so... I usually assume that whenever there's a lack of understanding, it's because I'm a dope. It's not always right, but it's a usually.
Don't you see that assumption. Your big fat figure is obscuring the screen, and that the only real way to scroll is through the crown?
I don't want to mock them, but I do think that it's going to be
maybe that's an example of the loss of monotony. The fact that there are two ways to do it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see a year from now when Apple has the ability to not only do the next version of the watch operating system, but also to do the next version of the watch hardware. I'm not expecting this to be radically different. I'm not expecting to see a round Apple Watch, but I think that they're going to listen to a lot of what people are telling them and when they've got these wired up devices that let them see what are people gravitating towards, what are people not gravitating towards. I'm blathering on, but it's such an interesting topic. I noticed that now you see a lot of people who are wearing it with the digital crown on the outside and not the inside, even though like you're sort of taught that on a watch that the crown should go like towards your fingers. And I think it was Hockenberry who was the first one to really talk about this a lot, that a lot of people find that once they start wearing this upside down, it's a more natural place to put that button. It's easier to grab it. It's easier to like sort of brace the other side of it with the other two fingers as you're tapping. So many things that Apple's not going to figure out until millions of people are using this device.
Credit to Apple. They make that easy to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anybody doing better, I guess, would be the question.
There's one thing before, that I was going to add to Andy's comment, because Apple, in a way, Apple is different. Microsoft wants to put that one Metro interface across everything. They want it to work on computers, on tablets, on phones. Google wants to have Material Design working on the web, on Chromebooks, in Chrome, and on Android. Apple, while Alan Dye is leading all this, the people who designed Yosemite were different than the people who designed iOS 7, and the people working on the Watch team were different as well. And they wanted them to have a similar feel in some ways. Like there's similar concepts behind them, but Yosemite is actually quite different than iOS 7. It's got shadows and depth and different design criteria, and the Watch also has different criteria. They want to build specifically for the device in many ways. And to Andy's point, the Watch is brand new, and they had a lot of people, thousands of people inside Apple using it for months.
Right.
Before they released it, and they changed it a lot over that time, but it's only going to be those millions and millions of people hitting it that show them where the actual rough points are.
It's civilians. I mean, you have the problem of you have thousands of people that Apple has trusted and people who work for Apple, as opposed to the finest test that any of us, we're trying to figure out, get an opinion that's useful to other people, is when you are at a Panera Bread and this is the first time someone has seen an Apple Watch and they want to see how it works and they actually want to put it on their own wrist. And you see, at what point do they go, because they thought something would work one way, but it doesn't. That's the only user testing that's really going to refine and prove the concept.
Yeah.
In some ways, I feel like people are going to get mad at me when I say this. Android Wear's taking advantage of Google's decision to go with cards.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I feel like cards is an interesting choice. Do you think it works as well? Or to me, I feel like it works better.
It was designed for that purpose. The guy who designed it meant for it to be able to scale from things like the phone to the watch. That was its intended purpose.
Yeah. I'm only on day 11. I'm only on day 12. I'm not at a point where I'm comfortable reaching any conclusions about Apple Watch yet. One thing that I do miss from Android Wear is the simplicity and the directness of this card concept, where I never feel as though I have to drill down to get information. I don't feel as though I have to interact with this piece of software any more than is critically important for me to interact with it to get that sort of thing. It's an interesting...
There are limitations. I mean, it's not... I also sometimes feel like, God, I want to swipe 15 more cards to get to what I'm looking for.
I wish that once there's a notification, I wish that there were an easier way to say, okay, I'm done with this notification, never want to see it again. I wish there were a really easy and trivial way to get rid of it. I haven't found it yet. I have this in about a week. I start actually reading the how-to book. I'm reading the reviewer's guide that I have. For the first 2 weeks, I just want to sort of figure it out on my own. There's something as simple as that. I'm a little surprised that I don't know how to get rid of a notification that doesn't involve surfacing a dismiss button and then tapping that button.
Yeah, this is new. This is the smallest interface we've ever had to deal with.
Yeah.
Everybody's trying different things. Microsoft.
And they have to satisfy two agendas, people who want it super simple and people who want a high level of functionality. But that's the really hard problem that we expect Apple to solve.
I can tell you one thing right now. Yeah. I for 4 seconds, I tried the crown on the left, Andy, and I hate it. So I've moved it back.
Okay. It's the same thing to me. It's like, I feel you have to brace either way.
It's easy to change, thank goodness.
It's like this is why I keep saying to myself and to others that you can't really trust any opinion of the Apple Watch that comes before at least 2 to 3 weeks of use. Because I do have on my Evernote, I have like a long, long list of like impressions, pro and con. And it's easy to see in the first 2, 3, 4 days, every single thing that drove me up a tree about it is like, okay, let's go into the app and on the phone and see, oh, yeah, there is a way to turn that off. Okay, there is a way to turn that off. Okay, there's a way to switch that from one way to another. So, I still haven't read any reviews, but I imagine that once I start reading them, I'm going to see a lot of, yeah, you really should have given it another
day. Mine took 3 weeks, Andy, so hopefully it won't be that bad.
Yeah. And I never read the reviewer guide, because I feel like that's an advantage that we get that others don't,
Well, but then again, I feel as though I need to have a clean consumer experience for my getting acquainted period. At the time where I'm actually writing the review, though, it's very, very handy. I accept that it's controversial because again, it's information that I'm getting that the consumer isn't. But nonetheless, if there's a feature that I was unaware of that's important enough that the company says, look, here is how we believe that this phone or this device or this computer should work. Here's who we designed it for, and here's what our imperatives were as we designed it. That can clarify things a lot, and so this is why I really do. Most consumers also don't get 45 minutes with the CEO of the company or one of the chief designers of the device, but that's time where I can say, look, you tell me the story of this. Yeah. What was going through your mind? What did you think was really, really important about it? And that's where a lot of things become a lot more clear. You feel as though if you're complaining about Jimmy Fallon is not as good an interviewer as Letterman was, or isn't quite as sharp a wit, you realize that, oh, well, the point is not to have host interactions. It's for prepared comedy. It's for sketches and things that are easy to assimilate. It's like, okay, in that case, right. I'm not going to say he's bad. I'm just going to simply say it's a different style of comedy.
It's all about getting to the clip. Come on, face it. We're going to take a break. Come back with more. Andy Iannacco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times. One of the things I appreciate about you, Andy, and I love, is you really spend time thinking about your job and what best way to do it. And so it's always great. Yeah.
I will only say that I'm inspired by Roger Ebert. I'm inspired by David Letterman. I want to be doing this for many more decades. And when the ball game is all over, I want people to see that, okay, he was, here's the body of work he created, and none of it was terribly bad. So unfortunately, that's what you have to do.
Yeah. Also here, I'm really glad to have Mr. Rene Ritchie from, I gave Andy props for showing up for every show. You do the same, and I'm so grateful that you're a regular on this, from imore.com, one of the smartest guys in the business. And first, I think your second time, right, Mike Hurley from Relay.fm?
Yeah, second.
We got to do it more than that. It's great to have you as well.
Thank you.
We are talking Apple. We're going to talk San Francisco font. The new font is here. In just a second.
I knew there's a reason why the kids were in the street laughing and cheering.
But first, a word from Trunk Club. It's pretty clear, I think, that most, not all, some guys like to shop. Andy loves shopping for his fisherman's, whatever the hell that jacket was last week. And by the way, I've been trying to find one in my size, and I can't because I want one too. Thank goodness, though, I have a stylist now, because she'd probably say, you know, you might want to think about wearing the safari helmet and the pith jacket or whatever it is. Trunk Club gave me a new way of shopping that is fun, zero work. Great advice, premium clothing, and it's free. So what happened? I signed up for Trunk Club, and Robin, my wonderful stylist, and I spent about half an hour on the phone talking about my style, my size. I was blunt. I'm fat. And everything she needed to know to help me pick great clothes. That conversation was not hard work. That was fun. Then she put up a website with like a hot or not thing on clothing that I got to pick what I liked and not. That helped her narrow it down. Then I got my trunk. This is how it comes. By the way, you will never get a trunk you don't expect. This is not like every month I get a new trunk. No. You talk to your stylist. She says, you tell her, I'm ready for another trunk. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. And then the new trunk clubs. All right, I'm excited. By the way, you only pay for the clothes you keep. So I didn't pay for the trunk. I didn't pay for her time. I didn't pay for anything in this trunk. When you're done trying it on, you got 10 days to try it on. You ship back the stuff you want, you don't want, and you keep. Only the stuff you keep is the stuff you pay for. So here it is, my new trunk. I am so excited. I don't know how I could show you this, though. It's so big. Here, there's a message from Robin. There's a packing list and return instructions. Prepaid return label. They even, isn't this nice? They give me replacement tape. And they give me three because they know I'm kind of a doofus. here's what we got today. A Harrington jacket. Oh, look at these. Are beautiful. They tie them up with these beautiful ribbons. Ah! This is like Christmas every time a new trunk club comes. Oh, she started to do bow ties. I said, I want bow ties. Ooh, that... You know what? I'm going to put this on today. I'm going to wear this today. I like this tie. Neckties, shirts from the best makers. This is a Connecticut American sportswear from New Haven. Did you tell her I went to a school in New Haven? Look at that. Oh, Lisa, you helped? Oh, Lisa gave her. That's the other thing. Your wife can talk to your stylist and say, look at this. This is pretty. I love this. So here's the idea. Now, I'm going to try these all on. They're all in my sizes. Sometimes Robin has included two, like two different jackets, says which one fits better. She'll keep track of that information. So from then on, she knows. Oh, I'm loving. Oh, feel that. Anyway, you don't need to watch me try this stuff on. You get the point. Great stuff. She picks it for me. I try it on 10 days. I keep what I want. I send back what I don't. Postage paid. That's it. Trunkclub.com/twit. You got to look good for your girl or for your job or just for yourself. Only pay for what you keep. There's no ongoing subscription, no hidden charges, just great clothes handpicked for you. Trunkclub.com/twit. And I'm keeping this bow tie. I'm putting this bow tie on now. Now. We thank them for their support of Mac Break Weekly. Oh, this is so pretty. Look at that. That is sharp. And look at even the lining is, woo!
This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius.
These are pretty. 100% silk. Look at that. What do you think, Lisa? Can I put that on? Oh, it's reversible. Oh, my God. It's both.
I actually picked that one out.
Which do you think, Paisley or Dots today?
I like the Paisley.
All right.
It matches your...
Paisley's going on. Back we go to San Francisco, ladies and gentlemen, and the new typeface for the Apple Watch. Is this going to be the typeface for more than the watch? Is this OS 10 now?
It's supposed to be everything.
Everything?
I mean, they worked on Apple. There was rumors of them working on Apple songs for a long time. I don't know what relationship,
right,
if any, this has. This might be a derivative or something based on Apple songs, or it could be something they like better than Apple songs. But it's something they've been moving towards for a while, sort of having that distinctive Apple-owned,
right,
look to their software.
Right. What do you think? This is Ben Lovejoy in a 9-to-5 Mac. Let me describe some of the features of this new font. The moderate aperture double-story form with flat-topped bowl. On the A, the flat middle apex diagonals meet a little above the baseline in the capital M. The large X height makes it legible even in small sizes. Type designers are a different breed, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness. Minimal contrast, straight stress angle, stroke is thinner in intersections. Oh, that's kind of cool. See, you'd never notice that. Look at the H.
They have legibility problems to solve, Leo.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's tiny.
Yeah.
Large I. I don't know. Oh. This is, for instance, look at the E, the lowercase e. This is how you solve that issue of small type by making a large gap between the bottom stroke of the E and the top edge there. Makes it more apparently an E. Single story G. Oh, you would want a double story G. Interesting.
Fit in all.
I think it's actually quite lovely. The designer Wenting Zhang. All right.
It's so hard for me to, every time I see, I will not make fun of these articles that talk about a font in such close detail, because I recognize that these people have an understanding of something that I do not have. To me, it still comes down to pretty or not pretty, or works for this device, does not work for this device. And so everybody is an expert on something, and usually there is a very, very fine point on every pencil you can pick up.
It's just interesting that Android had Roboto, and Microsoft, I forget how you pronounce it, Segao or Segoe or something like that, and yet the company that prided itself on bringing typography to the digital age didn't have their own typeface. Now they do.
Well, they did have it in San Francisco, as you well remember from the first Macintosh.
They didn't have a modern tie.
Wow, that is a good-looking tie. I'm liking
they using,
that.
They were using Apple, what's it called? And then Apple Myriad, and then Helvetic Annoy.
What's the San Francisco, original San Francisco font?
So different.
What did it, I forgot what it looked like.
It was a display.
It was crazy.
Yeah. Eclectic.
Madness. Eclectic. So this is a great site, typedetail.com. Is this Apple's site or? No, it's just a site where it shows off types. And then you could see all the different ways it looks. I'm not crazy about the choice of microphages as the word. Aren't those macrophages? Aren't those like disease vectors?
But it gives you a lot of letters to look at.
Yes.
I like San Francisco. I wouldn't mind seeing it, especially on the iPhone. I
very
think it's quite crisp looking. Yeah, I like it. I like the small caps as well. It's pretty. It's nice to look at. We're not going to see an iOS 7 like UI design overhaul in a long time, but doing something like just changing the font will make it feel very, very different, which will keep it feeling nice and new.
I have mentioned
it in the Apple Watch app because I believe that uses San Francisco already.
There's all kinds of fonts in that app.
Oh, are there? Is it? That's another thing we want to stamp out, right? Is all of the
like you said, Leo, consistency is a user facing feature. Yeah.
I have mentioned before, and I'll mention it again. This is a book that came out in 2002. If you're at all interested in typefaces, Eric Speakerman wrote a great book in 2002 which I've read and I actually keep around, Stop Stealing Sheep and Find Out How Type Works. And it really is a great book to read if you're at all interested in this subject.
Well, the Helvetica documentary is a great one.
That's a great one, too. Isn't it Helvetica that Apple's abandoning? Or isn't it Helvetica new that they were using? It's time. Helvetica is a great font, but you can, it's a little plain, a little vanilla.
Also, it's a little bit squat for the devices that are going to be using it.
Yes.
It's something that didn't occur to me until I was reading one of these articles about the new San Francisco font, is that it echoes the shape of the Apple Watch in a very, very subtle way. And so, this is why type design is a form of alchemy, because it's either a clear font or it's not a clear font. You either think it's pretty or you don't think it's particularly pretty. But then you talk to the person who designed it and you realize that they put as much thought into the development of this as anybody did into any large commercial word processor about here's my theory about design. Here is the function that this letter form is designed to create. Here are the influences from forms that go back 100 to 200 years. And you're like, oh my God, I had no idea. Yeah. I was just typing. I was just blown away that there's a curly thing on the T, and here it is. There's a whole long story about it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
And when you think about it, like a company like Apple, who cares so incredibly about design and sweats every detail, the fact that they don't control the typeface of their UI seems in hindsight now, it seems a bit crazy. Like, you'd think that they would definitely have their own fonts and typefaces for their UI.
I think I can understand why they wouldn't, only because it would be a project to Apple, particularly this would be a project on the same scale as, we don't have a word processor, let's have a word processor. So if they can choose, if they have people there who can say, here are 9 faces that we think highly of, any one of which would be a really great selection. All the while thinking, when can we actually get our hands on the idea of developing our own font? I think one of the things about Microsoft and Google is that it really does become part of the trade dress. So when you have your own unique typeface that is not going to be available in any other form, it's a powerful way to link all of the devices and all the experiences that you're presenting to a consumer. So you're absolutely right. It seems like it's long overdue, but I would never myself think about. I can't imagine how long this has been in the works and how much money in time and actual money it cost to put this together.
First Swift, then San Francisco. It's a big banner couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
Maybe
really.
You'll be able to program Swift in San Francisco. That's the next foot, like next shoe drops.
Let's talk about, speaking of next shoes, the next versions of both OS X and iOS. I presume that we're going to find out more next month at WWDC about both. But of course, Mark Gurman would never wait for an official announcement. He has an article at 9to5 Mac, iOS 9 and OS 10, 10.11, which is not a major point upgrade. It's still Yosemite, to bring quality focus, smaller apps, rootless security, legacy iPhone, iPad support. What do you think?
He is so good. He called me and told me what my Christmas presents are going to be this year.
Well, that's them, isn't it? Isn't this them? So let's start with iOS 9, codename Monarch.
I haven't heard all of the stuff that he's heard, but I've heard the same thing about the focus on core stability and the focus on core security. Those are two big emphasis that Apple has this year. And they both make a lot of sense, because security and privacy has been a Tim Cook level, first/feature on Apple.com. And in all the pitches they've been making, and they've got an incredibly good team working on security. So making that front and center just makes a ton of sense, especially when you consider things like Jailbreak and things like lock screen exploits and how they've made the system much stronger, especially in iOS 7 and iOS 8 were both huge steps forward. So carrying that forward makes a lot of sense. And they got their big projects out of the way. I know people are pained by what happened with Yosemite and iOS 8 and things like Discovery D and a lot of things. But all of that had to come together and had to work because if you look at the Apple Watch, all those technologies, while not developed for the Apple Watch, were serendipitous for how it turned out to do everything from apps to extensions. And it's a big, painful transition. But now that that's over, they have the time to go and sort of button everything down and polish it and make it rock solid for the next couple phases of those launches.
Yeah. Have they fixed Discovery D?
It is always being fixed. So every version of Yosemite has had fixes for Discovery D. I mean, they did a lot. They rewrote Discovery D. They rewrote Launch D, which is another one of the major. When you look at Yosemite, the design is what sticks out, but the amount of actual important code that changed is pretty phenomenal.
Discovery D. We mentioned this, I think, a couple of weeks ago. Craig Hockenberry reported it at Furbo.org. In no uncertain terms, a little bit explicitly, but I was with him. And by the way, my Apple TVs are unconnected at home because I don't know if it's Discovery D, but I suddenly lost my network over
bracket
the weekend.
Bracket 2, bracket 3, bracket 4, that's all Discovery yeah. D. Rich Siegel, I think, had bracket 99 on his at one point.
So I unplugged the Apple TVs. I unplugged all the routers because I have a 3 airport system for extenders. And then I've left the Apple TVs off. Rebooted the routers, the network rebuilt itself, WDS worked, and everything's fine. But I'm it must be right because I have an older OS X version somewhere that it's reinfecting it. I don't know, but I've left the Apple TVs unplugged.
It's almost like a cache poisoning.
Yeah.
I am hearing that. I agree with what Renee is saying. I agree with the overall tone that stability is going to be a big goal or one of the key mark features of OS 9. I have been hearing that although no company is ever unmoved by reports of how unstable a software release is or a bad time that users are having, Apple has particularly heard all of these complaints, and it is a source of pain that they wish to for themselves that they wish to solve. So I do believe that if there's anything for the next release that is not off the table, it is in making sure that the people who review this are saying this is the most stable and secure and problem free version of iOS we've had in 2 years.
And there was we did a great episode of Debug where we had Nitin Ganatra and Don Melton, who were both directors at Apple on the software side, talking about how you see bug fixes, and there are priority one, P1 bugs, and P2 bugs. And a lot of time, as a matter of pride, the engineers want to fix mm-hmm. those P2 bugs because, you know, their families use it. They use this stuff, and they simply don't have time.
It's
got to
be embarrassing.
Well, it's embarrassing, but it's also painful for them, and they want to spend their time on it, but they've got a priority one bug that's crashing some important system. And there's just, Nitin was talking about shoveling stuff into bags. You can either, you know, get bigger bags, which is more people, or you can shovel less stuff into it, which is less tasks. And now it seems like, and the key is to get the people at the higher levels to understand this. And I think the media attention helped everyone sort of realize that. And a lot of the engineers, I think, are super happy about this too, that it really is worthwhile not only doing what was scheduled to be done, but maybe doing a little bit more of that as well.
Is it difficult to market this as the key marquee feature, though, because one, you've got to stand on a stage and say, yeah, okay, things kind of sucked. And then if your big feature of iOS 9 and the next version of OS 10 is like stability, right? Like it's not really very sexy.
Should be the baseline.
Well, they did that with Snow Leopard. Yep. Not necessarily saying we know that, boy, did we crap all over the rug with the last one. Oh, boy, look, we got Febreze spraying in every single office inside. But there's a way for them to address it as saying that this is not going to be we're putting as much features on. I think the phrase that kept coming back to me during my briefings and stuff was that there are always things that are left in the drawer with every OS release, and today with this release, we decided to simply try to empty out that drawer as much as possible.
Yeah,
there was a great story about
Go on, Rennie.
No, please.
I think it's easier with OS 10 for that message, though. I think iOS is a more widely consumer oriented like thing. It is something that people expect every year. They look forward to the next OS release for the updates and for the new features. And I think with OS X you can get away with it a little bit easier. But I think with iOS, if this is going to be the biggest feature of iOS, whilst I would welcome it, I think it's going to be interesting to see how it's reported widely.
There was a great story about Snow Leopard, because a lot of people say we need a Snow Leopard moment, but Snow Leopard was in a way a huge lie. They had things they wanted to do like Exchange and Grand Central Dispatch and OpenCL, which were major engineering undertakings. And there was concern from Steve Jobs and the marketing department that you can't market this. Like, you guys want to build it, but we can't sell this. And then Phil Schiller and one of the guys in marketing said, wait a minute, what if we just say no new user features? Which wasn't true. There were a bunch of new user-facing features, mm-hmm. but it's hard to sell a few of them. It's easy to make a story about no features. We're really digging deep. And I think that's the kind of marketing acumen you bring to this. You make your line in the sand and you say, then we've heard you and we're really going to focus on this. And I've heard they've actually moved. There's stuff that they haven't had a chance to do in iOS 7 that got pushed to 8 and was supposed to be pushed to 9. And maybe that'll now get pushed to 10 to make more time to solidify things. And I think that's the sort of message that you sell, that, yeah, there'll be a couple really cool things, like bringing Force Touch to the new iPhone, major feature. Some of the cool stuff they're going to do is going to be really customer-facing. But then underneath that, instead of 10 tent poles, you make one of those, increase stability, and you have like a nice moment about that. And I think that's how you sell it.
You make it as one of the 4 to 8 icons that winds up lined up at the last card when they give the presentation about what they've added to iOS 9. One of those icons is just simply the ongoing slow grinding of hard boards that is software development, particularly at this level. Although Apple, just quickly, that Apple is, it's interesting that the position that they're in, particularly with the iPhone, because Microsoft looks like they're starting to find the keys. They've lost the keys to the car for the past 3 or 4 or 5 years in terms of mobile, but it looks like they've at least found the keys. They're not in the car yet, but they found the keys. Android is now at the level where you could really have a very, very serious discussion about which user interface is better designed. And that's something you would never have considered talking about 2 years ago with Android. And it's so much harder now to find areas of differentiation between an iPhone 6 and not even something like the Galaxy S6. But even talking about, here is a phone that costs $300 and you own it, it's contract free, and put them side by side and tell me what is in the iPhone, what the iPhone can do that this one cannot. And it's not going to be a relevant feature list for a lot of people. And I think where Apple has the greatest opportunity because today is to put in features that software that actually makes it more compelling a buy to run iOS rather than to have the actual iPhone itself. So it's interesting. It will be interesting to see during the keynote if Apple tries to really pump up, here are ways in which we're making the iPhone materially better for users, despite the fact that we can't put 3 cameras in it now, and we can't now make it like hexagonal screens. We can't do things that make it really spectacularly different, but we can at least change the experience for people and what they would do to make the experience better.
Well, it's like a magician. So the hand, there is hand waving. Look over here, and the hand waving includes, according to Gurman, the new split screen iPad app views. They're finally going to get a HomeKit app, right?
Yeah.
Mass transit direction. There's plenty of. Look over there. Look over there.
Well, these are really big deals. I mean, it's,
well, no, the, I'm not the, to biggest, diminish it. Oh, no, absolutely.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that you're dismissing it, but it's. I think that the most interesting. Obviously, we're all talking about the Apple Watch because it's cool. It's so different, and now we actually have them. But I think the most interesting conversation for the next year is going to be whatever is Apple going to do with the iPad, because are they clearly are not. The sales figures are saying that people are responding to larger screen phones more strongly than they're even responding to smaller size tablets. But does that mean that Apple puts iPad on, let's say, an iPod track, where they will continue to have it in the product line, but it will definitely be a second tier product? Or do they find a way to reinvent it and represent it, not as a not as the device has been for the past 5 years, which is, you tell us what it does, we'll agree with you because it does everything and it does all those things very well. And then if they can start to present it as, here is a 12-inch version of it that runs multiple apps, why would you even consider buying a $500 or $600 Windows notebook if you're a Windows user, when you can have something that is much more mobile than this? It works much. It's much more stable than a $600 Windows notebook, and it's a lot more delightful to use. It's going to be interesting to see how they solve that problem of declining iPad sales.
I, for one, am very much looking forward to an iPad Pro 12.9 inch with pressure sensitivity.
I've actually been thinking about that a lot. I mean, I did buy an iPad Mini because my personal iPad was a third generation, like the first Retina one, which was not a great iPad and was really starting to feel long in the tooth. And one of the reasons why I decided to replace it with an iPad Mini instead of an Air 2 was in anticipation of there being a Pro later this year or next year that I would be more interested in having as, again, as a workhorse, take it with you when you travel computer. But now I've been... it's interesting to see what these move, what Intel's new processors are doing on both sides of the fence. That now, for if Apple deserts, how much are they going to charge for an iPad Pro? Would they replace the iPad Air with it, or say that the minimum buy-in is going to be around MacBook territory? It's going to be about minimum buy-in is going to be $850, $900 for this. And then when you, I can't, every time I approach this, whether as a reviewer or as a consumer, I think, okay, I've got $900 in my hands to solve the problem of I need a powerful computer that's ultra, 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 ultra portable. What can I spend this on that might not necessarily be an iPad Pro? And then you look at some tablets from Dell and Lenovo that can do a lot of what it doesn't. Of course, it doesn't run iOS, so it doesn't run tablet mode as well as iOS will. But here is an ultra, ultra, ultra portable machine that's much more portable than my 13-inch MacBook Pro, but it weighs about only a little bit more than an iPad Pro. It will cost a little bit less, and I will not have any problems running desktop apps with it. And I get a free keyboard with it and a touchscreen and all that sort of cool stuff. It's going to be interesting to see how everybody navigates that question.
Is the MacBook in that equation at all, the new MacBook?
No, because it's now you're talking about a $1,300 computer.
Yeah, price.
I actually think it's a very good machine. I know I promised last week that my review would be on the Sun Times. It's actually just been filed, so it won't be up for another day or two yet. But for $1,300, it becomes it's at that interesting balance point between it is a machine that's optimized to be the Mac that you use when you travel, but it's priced as the one that you have to do all your work on, because not a whole lot of people have $1,300 to spend on a second Mac.
Yeah.
So that's why it's gotten me thinking about, again, these $600, $700, $800, $900 Lenovo transformers that you've, I mean, the Lenovo has a model that is a little bit lighter, even a little bit thinner than the 12-inch MacBook. But it has a better keyboard. It has more ports to it. It's easier to travel with. The battery life kind of stinks compared to the new MacBook, but that's not something that some people are going to like to have as an option.
What model is that? Do you know?
I don't have it in front of me.
Let me see if I can find it. I know people, when the MacBook came out, people said, well, you know, Lenovo already did this.
I think it's called the Lenovo V, I'm thinking.
V. I'll have to look and see.
Could be wrong. Yeah. It's a V something.
The problem is you have to use Windows.
I've got review hardware coming. But
who wants to use Windows?
I'm boycotting Lenovo still. They have like a year super in the penalty box. Well, they have about a year in the penalty box for me.
And is it okay if I suck my thumb and fondle the box?
It's your security box.
Hey, Renee, let me see your black watch.
Oh, yeah. I love this, Leo. It's space black, so it's diamond-like coated. And I can't describe it other than it's metal, but it doesn't.
I want it.
It feels like some Kryptonian or Batmobile-like substance. It's just, and it's so.
Is that stainless?
Black. Yeah.
That does look really good.
And the bracelet is so, I mean, like it pops right open. You take it right off. It's and the way that you
wrong
pull
watch.
The way you pull the little bands apart is pretty awesome, because you really just push the thing in and pull it, and
don't break it on the air, Renee.
it comes right open, and then you can take out the legs. So I took out prettier. Two links on each side.
Can you have more than one Apple Watch, or is that considered?
You can, but it's not set up for that, so you actually have to unpair and repair it. Because the backup is on your phone, though, it's much easier to have two Apple Watches than
quickly.
To have an Apple Watch with two iPhones.
They really have to understand that watch people never have just one watch. I mean, if you're into watches, you always have. I mean, I saw Ray Donovan, he pulled out a drawer. There's all these watches, right?
It's a constraint. It's just they couldn't. I don't know if there was not a lot of time to get all of the stuff done.
Yeah.
But, well, it's a one-to-one relationship, because there's a lot of things that have to. We've all talked about our dissatisfaction with messages, for example, when you have multiple things, and the ability to make sure that one iPhone and one Apple Watch worked really well together was a priority.
That looks so pretty.
They anticipated that with the bands, right? That, you know, that was to, that maybe they right. thought maybe people change will buy bands. One body, but a ton of bands. But I guess, yeah, when you look
spoilers
at,
for
oh,
my...
some days I like sport, but some days I want to wear space black steel, you know. It's
1 month in, my expensive. My Milanese is already looking ratty.
Spoiler for my...
no, look at, see, the, this is all...
They get inside up. Your head. They sell you the expensive thing, and then they make you feel bad for not having the more expensive thing.
See the wear on that?
That's stainless steel, though, Leo. I have other stainless steel, like real stainless steel watches, and you can go to a jeweler and have that buffed out. Or you can get some product on your own.
Or I could buy a space black watch with the black band.
I like
band.
Where this is going.
I really like that.
So DLC is really hard to scratch, but once it scratches, you're basically... You got a Sharpie, and that's your only
option. So yours is not scratchable. Mine scratches, but buffs.
I have, and I also have.
Oh, stop it!
I'll talk about later in the picks of the week.
Stop it,
oh, man!
See, the man has a problem.
Yes,
I'm trusting that Mobile Nations is paying for this, right?
That problem includes paying his rent this month.
Renee, I think you have a problem. For those listening, he just held up four other bands.
I don't have any other expenses, Leo. I mean, I've paid off everything else, so now just all my money goes to buying
to
technology.
Apple, as it should.
Yeah.
I shouldn't complain. I looked
and at, ancillary companies.
I shouldn't say anything because I played with Lisa. She got the gold MacBook, and I played with it, and I said, I have to have this. So I'm just as bad as you. Apple's so good at getting us.
Mm-hmm. They make lust-worthy items.
Lust, techno-lust. Wasn't that the hashtag Phil Schiller actually showed
Mac
on
lust.
Stage?
Mac hashtag lust. MacLust, yeah.
Yikes. $1,099
for the
black 40 stainless steel case with space black stainless steel link bracelet.
You say that like it's a bad thing, Andy.
That's a horrifying thing, Renee. That's terrible.
No, don't give him a hard
time. Edition, it's cheap. Compared to an edition,
Holy
it's cheap.
Crap.
I actually like it more than the edition. Don't tell anybody.
I'm sorry.
Show it again because it does really look nice.
Yeah.
Man.
So,
and that band is expandable. It's like an expando band, right?
Yeah. This has four of the the way I just took it open before. You can open it up and just pull the links off.
Yeah, but I mean, but once you've sized it, it kind of hugs your wrist with a gentle kind of loving embrace.
Yeah, it's like an arm. It's like an armored bracer.
I want it.
I'm super happy with it.
I should wait until you scratch it, and then maybe I won't.
Hooper got his the same day. I think we got his day before mine, and we both spent a few minutes just. Being incredibly kiddish about how great they were.
I apologize. I should not. I had one of those moments where I remembered it being as more than $1,000. I know it can't possibly be more than $1,000. It is more than $1,000.
And I should make sure Mike understands we have a pact amongst hosts not to give each other a hard time about what we spend on technology.
Or beard maintenance.
Okay. I'm sorry about the beard maintenance thing. I violated that, I think, early on.
I support your decisions, Renee. I want you to know that.
That's right.
I support you.
That's right, Mike. That's the way to do it.
Mike and I are companions in iPhone 6 Plus acknowledgement as well. We have a lot of things in common.
No, see, I'm still with the 6. I feel like Plus doesn't do anything. Has that changed, by the way? Because when it first came out, it didn't do anything but make everything bigger.
I've been an exclusive iOS user for a full week now. My Android phone is not even charged. I'm not even carrying it. I'm exclusively iOS for the first time in 2 years. And the one thing that is like the most delightful thing ever is I've got the iPhone 6 Plus and I didn't have the right power adapter for my car. And so for 2 days I was driving for 3 hours, GPS active, streaming audio, and coming back after 3 hours of driving, all on battery. Still got 86% battery left. And I would not have made that. Oh, God. And the Android battery life stinks to high heaven. It's the most humiliating thing ever.
I know.
If Apple decided to spend 15 minutes talking about the battery life of everything they do, game over. Game over.
I don't know if you guys have found this, but I'm using the Apple Watch. And the Apple Watch, I routinely have 40 to 50% left at night now. But I also have way more battery life on my iPhone because all of the little tasks that would otherwise light up the screen. Yeah. And an iPhone is an LCD screen. It's either on or off. There's no battery savings to lighting up a few pixels. The minute that lock screen goes lit, there's power being consumed. And because I use it less, I now have so much battery life left on my iPhone, I don't often charge it overnight anymore.
Yeah.
It's a winning combination.
It's true, Andy. I had the exact same. But even with the 6... I have yet to use it up before the day is done.
Yeah, it's not just about the size of the battery. It's like remembering exactly how good and how holistic Apple's approach towards power management is. It's not that, hey, well, we want more battery life, so we'll put in a bigger battery. And it's not even we'll slap down certain apps. It's that they designed this thing from the first time they connect one copper molecule to another copper molecule in the design of this. They're thinking about power management between those two copper atoms.
It's millimeters and milliamps. And the just-in-time multitasking, I think, is going to be the future because they've done all this coalescing and update stuff. So it knows you usually check Twitter at 6 o'clock. So it doesn't need to check Twitter at any time before you wake up. It'll just wait and do it a few minutes beforehand. And I think as technology gets smarter, more and more things will just act that way. It'll be the way things are done.
Renee, you've written 22,000 words more about Apple Watch than I have at this point. Is the watch supposed to do similar things like that? Because one of the things that still frustrates me is that I'll think, okay, you know what? I think I'll see if there are any – I'll find out what the score of the Red Sox game is. I'll use a glimpse at MLB at bat. And then I'll flick up to get to the MLB at bat. And then updating. And in the time that I'm updating, it's like, or I could take the phone out of my pocket – and unlock it and launch. Oh, yes, you know what? I got it on the phone faster than I got it on the watch. Does the watch learn what apps you tend to use and try to preload information, or is it all when you ask for the information, that's when
it's
you get the information?
Just magic, Andy.
Yeah, I don't believe it's as sophisticated as that yet. What it does do is if you use something frequently, it keeps it alive in cache and updates it more frequently. And if you don't, it winds that app down and then it has to go through that cycle again. I think that with the Apple Watch this generation, and I think actually Apple went overboard given how much battery life I'm getting. Everything is a slave to battery and everything powers down. That's why you have to reboot when there's power reserve because it literally shuts off daemons and those things have to be restarted.
Yeah.
So it is a complete slave to battery life and every little inconvenience that... So we've talked about this before. The currency of mobile is battery life. Every feature you pay for with battery life, and they've been incredibly conservative. And again, I think maybe a little too much given how well it's working.
Well, I have to give them credit because... I'm with you, Andy. That's the first thing I noticed when I and like you, I have to use an iPhone if I'm going to use the Apple Watch. And boy, you sure do notice that. On the other hand, I struggle a little bit with the iPhone UI and stuff. But you know what? Maybe that's worth it to have good battery life and a watch.
And that was
that isn't as good looking as Renee's is.
Well, that was part of the discussion we had earlier when we talked about, you know, people were worried about the iPhone battery life and there were reports that it was good and reports that it was no good. But that's just concern and stress until it actually ships and you can see what it is. And if you're interested in that kind of thing, maybe you want to watch that drama. But if you're a normal customer, not worrying about that stuff and just waiting to see how it works for you, I think is way more valuable.
Let me plug in my laptop here. Informational purposes alone, Renee. Not that I would ever consider buying one, but which exactly on here? Is it this 42 millimeters space black stainless steel case? It's that one.
Yes, and I got the 42 millimeter.
Not that I would ever consider adding that to my cart or anything.
And the pink bracelet where it took a long time to ship. I guess, I'm guessing DLC.
You
pink
bought
sport
that?
Band. My mom got the pink sport one, and hers originally said June, and then it arrived the same time as me. And it looks like these were amongst, except for the editions. The editions shipped afterwards, but these were the two longest shipping.
You guys get an Apple Care? I've been getting it. I don't normally do the extended warranty thing, but I have.
I do because I drop stuff, Leo, and I've gotten almost every iPhone replaced at least once.
So really, Andy, you shouldn't think $10.99, more like $1,168.
And for me, the Canadian exchange. So.
In America, yeah.
I will say that it's... As I'm starting to sketch out, like, well, I'll be writing about this in a couple of weeks.
I did not click add to cart. That was a mistake.
will you believe I'm trying to get the buttons not to click? Holy crap.
Don't click. Oh, man. Who's doing that?
I guess the simplest thing to do is just wait for the order to ship and then return it. Damn it. That's what I'm telling you about user interface design. They got to catch these bugs on the web end.
I did not click check out. It just by itself.
What am I going to do with this gorgeous watch that will make me look like some sort of international playboy?
Hey, and let's not forget
some photos.
You get two boxes now.
Yes,
I can replace the boxes I inadvertently recycled this morning. I'm sorry, Renee. You said there's more pictures.
I put some photos in the Google Doc for you.
You could play Apple Watch Jenga. Only $1,000 per brick.
It's terrible.
I think John Siracusa was talking about the hotel prices for WWDC, and he was saying every night was an Apple Watch.
Yikes. Yeah. All right, let's take a break because I got to pay for this watch. But We will continue. I want to talk more about new OS 10, you know, 10.10, 10.10.11, whatever. It's getting hard now.
Gala.
Yosemite 10.11. How about that?
Just call it Gala, Leo.
Gala. Is that the code name?
Yeah, G-A-L-A.
That's an Apple. Gala Apple.
Yeah.
They're going to run out of those, too. Actually, no, because you know what? The Apple industry continues to patent new Apple breeds every day, practically.
OS 10 Granny Smith.
Is there a Granny Smith?
Not yet.
I'm sorry. I'm a little distracted because I've somehow this machine seems to have entered my password onto the Apple site and checked out. I don't.
You've been hacked, Leo. You should let the transaction complete so the FBI will have more information on based on which to track and prosecute.
How could that happen? That seems impossible. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Not a law firm. I want to be clear about this. But they're great because they give you the ability to do a lot of the legal work you need to do for your family, for your business, at a much lower price. Although they can connect you with an independent attorney, should you need one. I'll explain how that works. Look, this is a magic time for people starting their own businesses. There has never been a better time in the history of the world. If you're doing it, if you're an innovator, you want to launch your dream, you got to remember LegalZoom.com. That was the advice Kevin Rose gave me. did you see him on Silicon Valley, by the way? We'll talk about that in a second. Man. He said, you should form an LLC when you start Twit. This was 10 years ago. I did. LegalZoom.com helped for a really reasonable price. Register your trademark. Did that, too, to protect your products and services. I don't have any patents, but maybe you have something that you've invented. Patent it, too. LegalZoom has helped over the last 10 years more than 1 million people, just like you, just like me, turn their ideas into reality. For a limited time, special savings this month on any trademark, copyright or provisional patent application. Wow, there's just a week left on that. Go to LegalZoom.com today to get started. They can help even if you have a great idea, but you're not sure to where to begin. But they're not a law firm, so let me explain what they've done is they've created this LegalZoom legal plan. They've lined up a network of independent attorneys in almost every state. They've pre-negotiated flat rate pricing. You can read the reviews of the attorneys, unedited reviews from LegalZoom users, their profile. Pick the one that's right for you. You know exactly ahead of time how much it's going to cost, and it's not much. And get the advice you need. I just think this is so great. LegalZoom is really empowering people to live out their dream. LegalZoom.com. Now, all I ask is when you check out, you use the offer code MBW, and that'll get you your special discount, too. So there's a little reward for you, too. That way they know where you heard it. LegalZoom.com. And don't forget, the promo code is MBW. I unfortunately can't remember my Apple password, so.
I bet Lisa changed it.
You know, I thought I was entering it correctly. I may have dodged a bullet there. Okay, so we got Yosemite 10.11. This, I presume, again, is going to be all stuff they'll talk about in a couple of weeks at the WWDC, right?
Yep.
Tell us what we know about that, or what you know about that, or what Mark Kerman knows about that.
I've heard very little about it, and Mark has posted some stuff about it, but I think it's still far less than iOS 9. So either there's less to talk about, or there's more in terms of the structural stuff than we would have anticipated.
Right.
I'm sure a lot of the stuff will be the same, because they're doing a lot of things that are both on both sides of the OSs now.
Yeah, like iMessage stuff and map stuff, that kind of
security
stuff. You can just goes across both.
Yeah, Mark mentioned that. I think I forget what he called it, rootless, where it's going to be a new system. And I don't know if that's iOS only, but where you, even if you're an administrator, you don't have root access, which would protect you against another slew of security threats.
That's interesting. Is there any way to get root?
I'm sure there's a way you can escalate to root probably in the terminal or for apps that really need it, especially non-App Store apps. But I think in general, I think a lot of stuff is meant to protect most of the people most of the time. And advanced users will still, especially on the Mac, they'll have a lot of things that they can do outside of that protection.
Right.
But for people who don't need it or never think about it, just not running in root or not running with full administrator privileges is a huge win.
We got a guy, it just happens, I won't name your name and I won't show a picture of you, who works in iOS forensics. What do you think? I guess this is only desktop, but rootless seems to me to be, I don't see how you could do that. Ultimately, something has to have super user permissions on an operating system. So it just makes it harder to escalate.
They've got some super smart, like the people who created sandboxing, the people who are doing core security now at Apple are super, super smart. And I'm guessing that I don't know anything about the engineering, but I'm guessing there's a way to give you a certain select amount of privileges without giving you full access, whether that's a virtualized environment or whether it's a pseudo environment or something.
Hmm.
Who knows if it'll be ready, because all this stuff is just, you know, it's always work in progress until it ships. But the idea, I think, is super interesting.
Got a tweet from Scott Gilliland, Flyer Scott on Twitter. He says, Leo Laporte, Renee Ritchie, Andy Inako, Mike, we all support you in your purchase of the Space Black Stainless Steel Watch.
Great people are here for
hashtag
you.
Not a problem. Thank you for your support. I think that's the wrong
We're
kind
glad
of
you could be with us.
You're all time. Enablers. You just want to see the drunk guy drink some more and then act crazy. That's exactly all you
want. The money doesn't go to Apple, it'll go to Lenovo. We're just trying to direct him at this point, Andy.
It's true. The Lenovo, you know.
Not necessarily Lenovo. I was chatting a couple of days ago, and I'm saying about, of course, the conversation has to be about the Apple Watch, and I'm saying, or I could have like the sport edition with a black band. And like take someone out, including airfare to the highest rated restaurant in Los Angeles for an 18 course chef's tasting menu and still have the watch. It's like, okay, I don't know.
Real time follow up, Leo. 9to5 Mac just posted an article about some people who are flipping their boxes for more money than Android Wear watches.
You see, this costs more than an Android Wear watch. This is about
a journalistic point of view. It's like, rather than, on other sites, it would be, isn't it great that for the amount of crazy money that people want to spend on a box, you can actually have a fully functioning, working Android Wear watch?
This seller that they mention is asking $59.99 for their plastic and fabric Apple Watch box. Holy cow.
Just the headline it makes this worse.
The thing that's depressing to me is I literally recycled those boxes. I kept them for a month. But here we are. You know, it's exactly 1 month since I got my Apple Watch. And I thought, it's time.
Your black stainless steel will come with a whole new box.
Oh, that's right. There you go. Let me press buy now.
You're practically getting the watch for free. Just make sure you rehearse that in a mirror two or three times before you talk. You say that to the accountant.
Yeah, the Twitch might give me away.
I was speaking about boxes. I got a box of premium Thailand. They have these pineapple cookies or whatever. And so the box that they came in was also maybe even better than the Apple Watch because look, it's how hard it is to get that one.
That is better.
So there is packaging. If you want to like sell a box of cookies for more than, you know, $2.99, you do have to upgrade the, you know, the boxing, I suppose.
Andy just sent us a link. Fire breaks out at Apple facility in Arizona. It is out now. It was confined to the solar panels on the roof. Is this the Sapphire plant?
Yeah, that's the former Sapphire plant, rumored to be converted into a data center. It went
they
to
must have
alarms,
built it on an Indian burial ground or something. I mean, they really, this thing is snake.
Sometimes dead is better.
I don't know. Well, or maybe it's just like people on break realizing that, you know, it's about lunchtime over there right now. So, you know, it's got to be a super hot surface.
Maybe that's it.
Memorial Day weekend, you probably got some hamburger patties left over.
A little grilling.
It just got away from them a little bit.
Two alarm fire, the new Apple plant at Elliott and Signal Butte. Solar panels on fire. The fire is now reported out. But there you go.
or maybe that's part of like when Tim Cook was talking about, well, we do have plans for the facility to include burning it down for insurance money.
Burning it to the ground. Oh, Lord.
Tim Cook, who an Apple spokesperson says was hundreds of miles away from the incident after the fire broke out.
Apple will put in subway, train, and bus guides for iOS 9 maps, something Google Maps has had for a while, but something you could use, and is now using robots for indoor mapping. Again, this is catch-up for Apple, but it's interesting that Apple is not ceding in any way the map market to Google. They're going to...
Look at the rest and how important it is.
Yeah.
They've been trying to do transit for a while. The problem with transit, and Google did a really good job of overcoming this, is that it's owned by all these little fiefdoms, and different municipalities keep the rights to their transit information. And you have to go and literally municipality by municipality, town by town, and get that information and then aggregate it. And they don't want the same thing to happen that happened with maps, which was largely bad data aggregation and cleansing and sanitization. So they want to do a really nice job with this. And they bought a couple, I think two or three at least, transit companies to sort of speed that process up. But it takes a while. Google spent a long time doing it.
It's very, very telling that Nokia has their own here. There are Nokia Here Maps trucks that do their own mapping. There's Bing that has their own mapping trucks. It was working out to be one of the greatest acquisitions that Google could have possibly made was to buy Waze, because they have traffic. 50 million people across the world that are essentially deputized into the remapping system, and they get and also about 6,000 or 7,000 people that just for fun like to update their own local maps to make them more accurate for construction things. This is such valuable information that this is well under the category of something that Apple wants to own for themselves, as opposed to being beholden to another company to provide this data, because it's non-negotiable. It's almost like buying your buttons for the phone, for the on-screen buttons from an outside source. It's such an intrinsic part of the mobile experience that why would you not own the data that you're using for this?
We've heard over and over that Nokia wants to sell its Here Map division. Microsoft licenses those maps for Bing Maps, but does not own them.
Bundle it with BlackBerry and have a fire sale.
I'm wondering why Apple. I mean, Apple's got more money than they know what to do with. This seems like such a natural. It's overseas money, right? It would go to Finland. I don't understand why it's just not a done deal.
They have a licensing agreement. There used to be two companies, TeleAv, and I forget what the other one was called.
TeleAtlas.
One of them was bought by TomTom, and one was bought by Nokia. Right. And Apple licenses the TomTom maps. But to Andy's point, that might not be where they need to spend their money. Maybe they need to spend their money on a company that does what they're already doing, which is massive aggregation of user base traffic data, or maybe it is in the internal mapping or in the transit area. Because the maps that they're getting better at.
Yeah, and also the scale of the problem of buying an existing map company and integrating it into your existing software. It's not as though it costs just as much as launching your own mapping service, but it's close enough that why would you buy a home and then put $200,000 worth of upgrades into it when you could build a house for $240,000 that from the ground up is built to fit exactly what you want.
Right.
I mean, like, what does Here have that Apple needs?
Like, well, what, they have.
I don't think I'm familiar enough.
So they bought. Is TeleNav what they have, Renee?
TeleAtlas and NavTech and TeleAtlas are two companies. And I forget which one they bought.
I always forget too. But they would no longer have to license stuff from TomTom.
Yes.
So they would own their own deep map integration. Here does have traffic, I think. It certainly could be added. It's an excellent mapping system. It's not that it replaces Apple Maps, but boy, that would give them a leg up. The problem is Google's been doing this for 10 years before Apple got into the business.
Yeah, mapping really is a Zeno's paradox sort of thing, where the first step is you get 50% of the data you need, and that's easy. The next big step, you're only getting 25% of what you remain. And then getting the closer and closer you get to having 100%, the harder the remaining data is. When you get to the level of Here Maps, or what Nokia was doing, you have to get to the level where you are actually sending people out to physically check out every building that your map data tells you is a hospital, so that you're verifying that if you're going to send somebody to an emergency room, that emergency room is there. And also verify that, no, not just simply tell people that it's on this block. I'm going to steer them to exactly where the emergency room entrance of this place is. And that's just one example of the sort of data where you need good, detailed, fine-grained, boots-on-the-ground data that is really hard to just, you know, buy a whole bunch of Ford Explorers and put goofy stuff on the top and send people driving around from street
to
street.
They're doing that, Andy.
They're doing that, too. But just as you say, with Zeno's paradox, you never get to the end. Apple continues everything, buys Here Maps. I mean, how much could it cost? $10 billion? It can't cost that much.
You should get a brokerage fee if it works now, Leo. set up the deal. Take 10%.
Why not buy TomTom if they're already like licensing TomTom?
I don't know if TomTom's in play.
Whoever they want.
Well, but Here's Apple, in play. Right? We know Here's in play. And the problem is, what you also want to do is make sure Here doesn't fall into the hands of Microsoft or Google or Yahoo or a variety of other players who would like to be players.
I heard Uber.
Uber wants to buy them, and Uber. We were talking about this on Twitter about a month ago with Jason Calacanis. Uber is heavily reliant on the Maps application on the device you're using, whether it's Apple Maps, Google Maps. And that reliance is a problem for them. It's a vulnerability. So owning their own mapping software would be hugely valuable for
them. You never know when Facebook wants to buy it. I mean, they had a tentative Facebook flirtation with Maps.
It'd be smart if Apple wants to look. This is it's if not an offensive play, it's at least a defensive play. I think it's smart.
Yeah, and also, I mean, Uber is an interesting target for all the good reasons that it's a very, very well-known and well-accepted sort of system that's doing very well. But also, you realize that you have how many thousands of drivers that are retracing popular routes through all the biggest cities in the entire world now. That is a lot of great data. If Facebook wanted to suddenly have access to data for restaurant recommendations, business recommendations, traffic information, they could get a lot of stuff with just one company. But it's to a certain extent, it's you can't make the assumption that every company is for sale or that every company wants to be acquired by Apple. You get into an Elon Musk situation where I will let you buy me so long as all you give me is money and I don't have to do anything you don't tell me to do. I built this company not to sell it for a profit, but because I have a vision and I want to pace the stage holding my hands like this and stand in front of a big spinning map of the world as I talk about my worldview. This is not something that can be gotten by a check for $17 billion.
Yeah, I don't know whether TomTom is one of those, but I do know here is, according to everybody in play, Nokia wants to get out of that business. Yeah. Benchmarks coming in from the French site Mac Generation. Thanks to Mike Rumors for the translation. Looks like Apple's claims that the SSD in the new MacBook Pros are twice as fast are true. Quick Bench reporting read speeds of 2 gigabytes, not bits, 2 gigabytes per second. Jesus.
It's just silly.
And write speeds of 1.25 gigabytes per second. I think that's got to be as fast as anybody really would want.
Yeah.
What the problem is, of course, buses get saturated. You can have faster SSDs. They're really fast, but the buses have to keep up. And I guess that's what Apple's doing is putting these SSDs on a very fast
PCI hardware team. Express. I mean, as much as their design team and other teams get credit, their hardware team does amazing work.
That makes it. That is not a one of those. A lot of benchmark numbers. Oh, big deal. You're not going to see the difference. You will see that difference.
Yeah.
That's a significant.
It's a lot of I/O bound tasks still, especially if you're doing heavy duty computing.
I think that's the new. That's the frontier. We all have enough RAM. Processor speeds are very, very fast, except on something like a MacBook. But I/O disk I/O has really been the hold up. So this makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's every time people ask me about, hey, I've got a 2008, 2009, even a 2010 MacBook or iMac, and I'm considering either just upgrading it or just limping along or buying a new system. And I keep telling them it's not just you're thinking about how about a CPU upgrade when I tell you that having a SSD inside your system and having an operating system that's optimized for SSD and optimized for all the special little nooks and crannies, the little features they're putting into the hardware. The first time that you do a backup and you sort of turn away because you know that you've got 3 hours to go out and get waffles and come back and realize that, oh, progress bar is actually halfway there. Okay, this is good.
And
by the way,
go back.
they're not even at the fastest they can go. According to 9to5 Mac, the new MacBook Pro uses a solid state drive manufactured by Samsung, but the Mac Generation says it does not use the faster NVMe Express SSD protocol that the 13-inch was updated to. I bought the 13, so I should see that difference on my... I'll go run some benchmarks and get back to you. But it sounds like they could even go faster.
Wait, did you just do it, Leo? Did you just finish the benchmark?
I did it 5 minutes ago, but it's so fast it went backwards in time.
Yeah,
no, I don't have it with me.
Can you think of another marginal upgrade to the MacBooks that has had so much significance?
Huge.
I'm talking about they didn't change the body. They didn't change the design. They didn't do it as a keynote level upgrade. They just simply
they're still using Haswell. They're not even – they didn't even –
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, imagine already they've done SSD improvements that are transformative. They've done Force Touch, which I think is transformative. And now we still have this lurking in the background. Here's what's going to happen. We have a real latest generation CPU in there. It's almost as though they don't even need to shave another 3 millimeters off the thickness of the thing and start switching everything to USB-C because we're trying to make a desktop that's so thin you can't see it from one edge. It's just enough to simply to keep what they have, but just make it internally better.
Apple Watch orders, this was deceptive, but now I feel like I have learned my lesson. I bought the headline that the Apple Watch orders plummeted dramatically after the first pre-orders. Yeah, they plummeted to 30,000 a day. Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's like more than the iPod or the iPhone when they first came out. So that's almost a million a month, 10 million a year. Okay, that's a terrible flop.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to that statement that if only 5% of eligible iPhone users bought one, that's right. Still an incredible, it's like 20 million or some ridiculous.
When you have that, Matt, exactly.
Yeah.
Gold watches are now arriving. I saw an unboxing, an anonymous unboxing. If I had a gold watch, I'd probably do it anonymously as well.
You feel like Beyonce missed a beat by not doing an unboxing, Leo?
Beyonce, don't you understand? Hers probably did not come in a box. Hers came in a Rolls Royce limousine with five Apple executives. I don't think hers came in a box. Do you want to show the unboxing? Do we care? It has a gold, even the screen is gold when you turn it on.
It's like the Virtu where a guy flies it to you personally.
Yeah.
For $17,000, the entire thing needs to be gold. Because everything, any gold, just all gold.
It should all be gold. And I love that whoever's doing this obviously is not going to keep the watch because they're wearing rubber gloves.
So they're going to sell the box, though, Leo.
Yeah, maybe that's it. They want to keep the box clean.
Do you still have a two-week return on it?
Do you?
Yeah,
I guess
they
you have to.
I honestly don't know.
But imagine the stink eye you'd get when you bring it back.
Oh, but for the YouTube clicks you'd get for a really nicely commercially done
video.
Yeah,
remember we heard that they were going to examine it with a microscope when you bring it back to make sure that you didn't shave gold off of it.
So that box, let's see how the box has got the blue lining and stuff. That's actually a charging box.
Right.
You can plug, I think it's a lightning connector into the back, and the little disc that's inside is actually the magnetic disc. So you can just plug it right in there. It's a little lever feeling box.
I'm guessing there's about 50 Kickstarter projects to do the same thing for a lot less money.
Well, there are people plating it for like $300. Sorry, Andy.
How much could you get on eBay for the little plastic tab he just pulled off of the back of the edition watch?
More than an
It'd be worth trying.
How big is that charging cable? It's huge.
It's pretty long, and on the regular one, it's like 6 feet.
1 meter and 2 meter versions.
Do they ship the 2 meter version though? I think with the at least they did with my stainless. Yeah, because I know because I have it all looped.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
What a beautiful plastic band it comes with too.
What they ordered the plastic band?
That really says elegance to me.
I made fun of that, and then the new Rolex came out, which was $25,000 and had a fluoroelastomer band. So I'm guessing my idea of trendiness is not commensurate with popular.
It's kind of a
But Rolex makes more than one watch, don't they?
It's a reverse
and this isn't their first impressive. We've suddenly decided to make luxury watches. We may not ever have to get to make another one if we muff this one. Here's your rubber band that you get for $10,000.
If you have $7,000 more, you can get a modern buckle, Andy.
There you go.
God, that's just crazy pants. That's just crazy.
Cult of Mac says the Pebble sales are dropping like a rock because of the Apple Watch. I don't know if that's true. The Pebble Time comes out this week, right?
Yeah, well, nobody could get an Android Wear for iOS. So Pebble, I think, was a de facto smartwatch for people who had an iPhone and wanted a smartwatch.
Oh, that's who's going away. The people who have iPhones. It didn't really... I never tried it with an iPhone. It probably didn't work all that.
It wasn't as good as Android. It couldn't do it. It didn't have as hooks into the system that it could into Android.
Right.
Yeah. It was still fine.
I read an article on TechCrunch that apparently Pebble needs more money and they're struggling to find any funding with it.
Didn't they get enough?
People don't want to invest.
Well, how much did they raise on Kickstarter for the time? A huge amount.
God. Yeah, but I mean, that might fulfill the orders, but if they want to continue, they may have a really high burn rate now.
Right.
And it seems like they're struggling to get funding, which would kind of make sense. I think if I'm a VC, one place I'm not putting my money right now is Pebble. Even though they're an interesting company, they're doing really interesting stuff. But looking at it right now, they're not the wearable company.
Well, they're getting clobbered. I think the smartest thing they did was to drop the price of the introductory model down to under $100 because that's a wonderful value for less than $100. Yep. That's a great consumer choice to say, I just want to have a cool watch. And, oh, wow, it really does cool things with notifications and stuff like that, too. It's the difficulty when they're trying to make money off of higher margin products where I think they're being squeezed. I think that the person who is eager to spend $400 on an Apple Watch isn't going to care about a $200 Pebble Time. But people who are interested in spending $150 on a good fitness band might not want to buy it, and the people who have $200 to spend on a smartwatch are going to be looking more at Android Wear, especially because Google I/O, their big developer keynote is in a couple of days. It's on Thursday, and there are a lot of announcements expected about updates to Google Wear. And this is also a good. It's interesting that Motorola. Motorola seems to be making a lot of Moto 360s available at really, really good discounts now, which provokes someone to think that perhaps they have second generation hardware on the dock and ready to ship sometime really, really soon. And so if they manage to ship something as good as Moto 360 or better at $200, you start to wonder, why am I recommending? And if Google, as rumored, is preparing to ship a new version of the Google app that allows people to use the Android Wear watches with iOS, I try to pick myself in the mind of what circumstance would I recommend someone get a $200 Pebble, and for now I'm coming up blank. So it's a tough situation for them to be in, for sure.
Microsoft is. Probably annoying Microsoft Windows users by its attention to iOS and Android. But here's something for you. If you get Windows 10, you will be able to sync up with your iPhone or your Android phone. A phone companion app will come with Windows 10. You will launch it and pick the kind of phone you have. And Windows Phone, of course, is the preferred choice, but Android and iPhone are right in there. And it will sync music. It will, you know, do your OneDrive thing. That's the storage, including the Photos app on your Windows 10 PC.
It'll lure you away from iTunes?
Yes. No.
all these people who are now standing on the sidewalk watching iTunes burn in front of them and holding a gas can in their hand now know that in their other hand they can have a Windows machine. Yes.
This is
such a strong move. Every time Microsoft comes out with new news about Windows, whether it's the right one for me or not, probably not. But it's, wow, that's a strong move. Realizing that a lot of people who have iPhones don't have Macs, and still they've got the most popular desktop operating system on the planet. And if you simply say, we don't care what phone you use, we will make sure that Windows works great with whatever you have. And putting Cortana, which in many ways is one of the crown jewels of Windows 10, and making it available, at least in some fashion, on iOS and Android, that just it provokes someone to say, "Hey Siri, excuse me, Hey Shlomo," and say, "Hey Cortana."
There's no
and
point
see
backing which, out of it once you say it.
Double down.
I don't want to trigger people's phones.
Well, you did, the first thing it said was, "Hey Shlomo," on it.
I did hear from one Shlomo via email say, "Please don't."
Don't use my name.
I've already been hearing this around, and it's making my life a little bit more difficult than it needs
rats.
To be. So I apologize to any Shlomo out there. but it's interesting, given that Cortana is the thing that people like to play with, and it's a really strong effort. In many ways, it's superior to Siri in terms of being a digital personality that you interact with, and this agent does things for you. It's hard to see where it's flagging compared to Siri. Of course, you run into the same problem that Pebble ran into, where if you the only person who has access to the full features of the iPhone is Apple, and so you're never going to be able to produce a third party product that can integrate as nicely and as tightly with as anything that Apple ships. Kind of sad. I would love to, in an ideal world, and I realize this is just a hypothetical ideal, I would love Apple to simply say, you know what, we will release the APIs to everybody, because we feel as though if people were to compare Apple Watch or Siri or anything that we make to any competitor, they would still use our products, because it's not because it's relying on proprietary information, it's because we've engineered this so well. I'm not complaining about that with Apple, but I do sometimes reflect upon the fact that people don't have a choice in the matter, that they are taking the products that are compatible with iPhone because it's the only product that is compatible with iPhone.
Actually, you know, Windows 10, it fixes so many problems that I had with Windows 8. I actually kind of like it. I'm going to be very interested. But anyway, as you say, many people use it by choice. Many others use it because somebody else made that choice for them. If the upcoming version of the music app will store and access music from OneDrive, which, by the way, offers unlimited storage
The only thing I'd suggest is that if you like this stuff, really support it, because I have this feeling that Microsoft is trying everything right now. Like they're doing like the OS 10, like doing like the Cocoa support, Objective-C, sorry. They're doing all these different things. Right. And they'll probably put the wood behind the arrows that do the best and let the other stuff sort of linger or disappear. So if you like these things, so a lot of people just use iCloud now. They don't even bother with iTunes. But if that's something that appeals to you, use it and be loud about it, because that will encourage Microsoft to double down on the things that are popular.
Yes. The Cortana app, which will be available on Android and iOS, isn't out yet, I don't think. In fact, it's going to come out for Android first, but it will be out for iOS later. Let me see. Available for Android end of June, iPhones later this year. But remember, Windows 10 doesn't come out officially until they said end of summer. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, our Windows experts on Windows Weekly, say end of July, end of July is not so far off. It's smart. If you're Microsoft, acknowledge as they have, people use a variety of devices and support it. You're much more likely to succeed in an environment where you do that than where you say, no, you have to use Windows.
When you're in Microsoft's current position, this is a wise move to do.
Yeah.
And also, to be fair, if Windows Phone were an actually successful product, maybe they would protect access to Windows Phone. With 2% of the market, they've got nothing to lose by simply saying we will make all Windows Phone products software available everywhere we can put
it. Let's see. I think we're going to wrap this up here. I think I had one more. No, that was it. Let's take a break. When we come back, our great guests from Replay.fm. I'm sorry, Relay. I always add a P. Relay, because you're listening for the first time, Mike Hurley. Tell us about Relay.fm.
So, I mean, we've been around since August. We've got a nice little stable of shows. We have the great Jason Snell, Federico Vitici, to name just a few. We're growing all the time, and we've got some great tech stuff. We've got the Pen Addict, which I know that you love the idea of, Leo.
I'm a Pen fan.
Recently, Mac Power users with
David Sparks. That's great.
Yeah, love David him. Sparks and Katie Floyd joined us recently.
Nice.
We're moving on, and we're doing great. We have some great tech stuff, gaming stuff, and I think listeners of this show would really dig some of our shows. So check them out at relay.fm.
Very good. Also here from imore.com, they have podcasts too. Renee Ritchie. everybody's got a podcast now. Renee, you got to bug
all of us, Leo.
Yeah. Yeah. That means you got good microphones. That's all. That's good. I like it.
We have Paul Kafasis from Rogue Amoeba on Debug this week.
Love Rogue Amoeba stuff.
Might go about 3 hours. I'm not, the final edit's not done.
How long did you actually talk for?
About 3 hours. Our record is still 6 hours, but this was about 3 hours and 20 minutes.
I don't feel so bad anymore. That's awesome. iMore.com and the podcasts are there on the top right there. You can actually, they used to be. I don't see them anymore. Did you run out of room?
iMore.com/podcasts.
So just go directly to iMore.com/podcasts.
I think it's one of those things where it's responsive and more stuff populates it as the wider it gets, right, and then the things drop off.
Believe me, I know how this is. And it's just, there you go. Look at them. Look at all the podcasts. Andy Iannacco is also here. He's from the Chicago Sun-Times. Thank God he sticks to print. Well, maybe not.
Although you can get it on phones and the web too. I'm not just simply an ink stained wretch. I'm not selling matches on the street yet.
And there's also Iannacco's Almanac on 5x5, and we've just having a great time.
I'm a podcasting gadfly.
You're a gadfly
from my beloved home base here at Twit.
Whatever. Let's take a break. When you guys come back, picks of the week. But first, I got a pick for you. BraintreePayments.com. Braintree is a really great solution for anybody working on a mobile app. So many developers looking for a way to put payments in their mobile app, and you could hand code something. I think everybody by now has realized that's the worst idea. Or with just a few lines, you could integrate Braintree payments and start taking everything, not just credit cards, Apple Pay, even Bitcoin, Venmo, PayPal. It's all in there. And boy, so many people now are using Braintree. You get some confidence when you know that Uber and Lyft use Braintree. Airbnb and hotels tonight use Braintree. GitHub started with Braintree. That was how they began taking payments, and now it's massive. In fact, you could do the same. You could scale your business with Braintree payments from your first dollar to your billions, no matter how your customer wants to pay. Take a look at that V.0 SDK. They even have a sandbox you can test the code on your own app and get a sense of what it's going to feel like. Very easy to integrate, supports all the major platforms like Node.js, Python, Ruby. You know, I don't have to go through this with you. You know what I'm talking about. But I do want you to do one thing. Go to BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak to log in. Because if you do, if you decide to sign up for Braintree, you get your first $50,000 in transactions fee free. And that's a pretty penny. I haven't done the math, but I think that's not an insignificant amount of money. BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. Just the feeling, it takes all currencies, the feeling you get of just how easy was that just makes it worthwhile. BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. We're so thrilled that they support us just as we support them on MacBreak Weekly. Let's start with Mike's pick of the week.
So I have an app I want to talk about today called Highball, which is a great app to share and collect your cocktail recipes.
Indeed.
I'm a big fan of this app. It's made by Studio Neat, who are behind the Glyph and the Cosmo and the Neat Ice Kit. They're a great little company, and they make little companion apps now that go along with their physical products. So they make a couple of different cocktail products. So you can create your own recipes. They have some ones in there that you can find, and you can change all of the ingredients. You can change all of so you can put the names in, but you can also change like the measurements and stuff that you want to add. They have a great way to add a little drink image. Like you kind of get to choose from different elements of a drink and stack them up together to make a nice little image as you see on
pretty.
The page.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very nicely designed.
Clear a little bit.
Yeah, it is. It's got that kind of like, it's got a nice playfulness, but it's like really flat and just like nice colors and stuff. But my favorite thing about this app is once you create that your the recipe that you like, you can share the recipe card on social networks and stuff like that. And if you see somebody, like you see it on Twitter, they've shared their drink, and you take a look at the drink, you can save the image that they've shared on social media, open Highball, and it will import that. If you open, you can open the image like from the photo picker, and it will then import all of the ingredients into your recipe book that you can then go in and amend. Oh, nice. So they use QR codes and all that magical photo scanning stuff. So you can end up with, you can share them with your friends, and then they can save your recipes and stuff like that. It's a really cool app, and it's free. And if you like any kind of mixed drink, it should be something you take a look at.
And who doesn't, after all?
Indeed.
It is free. Highball. Share and collect cocktail recipes. Available for, it looks like iPhone only, yeah, iPhone.
Yes, iPhone, yeah.
Yeah. Who wants to bring an iPad to a bar, though, really? Let's face it. Thank you, Mike. Great to have you, Mike Hurley, Relay.fm. Renee is going to share his Jones.
Yeah, so I've got an obsession for bands. Like, I'm not as bad as some people. I've seen some people buying really high-end watch bands for hundreds and hundreds of dollars and using those. I haven't done that yet. But I have got all the ones that you can use with the watch. The floral elastomer ones, these I really like because they're waterproof and they really do work really well when you're exercising. They even, as Georgia likes to point out, have sort of a concave inside so that it doesn't keep the moisture stuck on your skin.
I like that.
I thought that was super clever. Yeah. They have leather ones too that I really like. You have the classic buckle here, which really is nice. It's sort of stiff when you first get it. I've only worn it for a couple of days, but it does soften down as you wear it. And that gives you a really classic sort of a look. And because Apple has this really smart slug and groove system, it takes literally a couple of seconds, maybe 30 seconds, to swap out the bands. The leather loop we've talked about before, it's the stretch pants, like the Milanese loop of bands. And this just goes on both sides, and then you adjust the loop magnetically like you would the Milanese band, and it just locks down. And then you can keep adjusting it during the day. And it's leather, so it feels really nice. It's not waterproof, but it doesn't keep water next to you either. And I've been enjoying that. That's sort of like a casual band. And then the one that Leo and I got originally, which is the Milanese one, which it's metal, but it's such a nice weave that it actually feels like material.
It's not its fault that it starts to look like an old DeLorean after a few months.
No, again, I've had stainless steel watches before, and that's what happens, especially the bottom of the band, which hits your computer or hits the table or the things you're working on. And you can get, this is an age-old watch problem, and they know how to fix that at jewelers, or you can get the stuff on your own.
I have to say, watch hasn't done that. I guess it's coated, right?
Well, they're both coated the same. It's just the watch isn't on the bottom of your hand, so it's not knocking against the table and the computer when you're typing.
Oh, okay.
and all those things. And then, of course, the DLC-coded link bracelet, which I really like. You can get it in I don't know if they sell it separately in silver. They might. They don't in black yet, but Apple will tell you it takes about 9 hours to make each one of these because all these links are actually slightly different, the ones at the top and the ones at the bottom, and then the ones that go in between. And I love that without – I've had link bracelets before, and you actually needed a jeweler or a special set of tools to make any adjustments to them. And this, I just popped them in, popped them out.
Yeah.
I had friends who wanted to try it. I adjusted it quickly for them, and that – Steve Aquino wrote a great article, I think on Mac Stories, about how great it is to have accessible watch bands because he has slight palsy and my mom has arthritis. And because of the loop bracelets and some of the other ones, it's way easier to put on than traditional watch bands have been. So it's sort of really great design that happens to also be really accessible design, which is a nice plus.
Yeah, I have to. Yeah, I agree. Every time I got a new watch, I used to make a trip to the jeweler to get links removed. It was a pain in the butt.
Me too.
So nice. Do you carry links, extra links in your pocket?
I put them in the box, Leo, so I have to make sure I don't throw them away.
And you carry the box with you, that way people can try on watches.
I've taken them out and kept them very carefully. I haven't ever added any back in. I've just discovered
something horrific. Now that I look at it, my stainless steel, for some reason, the left side, not the right side, is all scratched up. So that you probably can't see that on camera if you're watching.
And you can buff that out.
As they say on Antiques Roadshow, that's good, honest wear.
You can buff that out.
Yeah, it's Indiana Jones look, Leo. It goes
well. Thank God. My pick of the week is the black watch that I'm going to get in a month.
Now it's a deduction.
Yeah. Oh, now it's a deduction. Actually, they said July. But they have been
shipping faster.
They've been shipping faster than – that's like they're sandbagging you a little bit. They're saying, oh, yeah, you're not going to get this till July. You get it earlier.
Yeah, they would rather exceed expectations than the other way.
Okay.
My mom's was supposed to come in June, and it arrived in May, so that was good.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right. You know, the good news is I just got a notification from American Express. Apple forgot – they only charged me $1. So, little tip.
Oh, speaking of which, Leo, as much as we were talking about the interaction model before, my mom got her Apple Watch and I was busy working. And by the time I got there, she'd set the whole thing up and she was using most of the features.
Wow.
And she's mostly an iPad user.
Nice.
She went through and just pressed the buttons and followed the directions. And she got herself going, I think, on almost everything. She didn't notice setup activity, but once I showed her it was on there, she set that up as well.
The onboarding's very nice.
Yeah.
We had to, Lisa's watch stopped responding. She has the 38 stainless. So I went through the usual troubleshooting steps. I wiped it, which is no big deal because it's all backed up. That it was not connecting. You know, you're getting the phone with a slash through it. Then I tried to pair after wiping. It still wouldn't pair. You know, where it gives you that little space cloud and you point the phone at it. The phone never would see it, even though it should have. And then I tried the manual pairing, and that didn't. It's like the Bluetooth wasn't working. So I said, I don't know. We're going to have to bring it to the Apple store, I guess. And then in the middle of the night, I woke up, like 2 in the morning. Wait a minute. Reboot the phone. So we rebooted the phone. Not even reset the phone. Just turn it off and on again. It all works.
Yeah, if you try just cycling Bluetooth, that often works as well.
Yeah, I think it was some weird Bluetooth thing. Her phone has always been a little sketch. She's a 6 Plus, and it's just always...
You still got the store page open? You should buy her a new one.
You can get it. Apparently, you'll be able to get it in rose gold this fall.
Oh, yeah, with Force Touch, right? I mean, the fall's going to have new phones. Can we wait till then?
You're not going to buy her a rose gold phone and then force her to wear a watch that doesn't match the phone.
Oh, crap.
You should buy
Andy Anatko, your pick of the week.
My pick is the sort of app that I really, really like. It's an iOS app for the iPhone called OneShot. If you've been on Twitter, for the past 3 months, there's a certain vogue where if you're linking to an article, you used to try to figure out, okay, what 120 characters am I going to quote to convince people that this is a good article you should read? And people start saying, well, actually, I'm on my phone. Why don't I just take a screenshot of a paragraph I really like? I'll highlight it with a text selector and then attach that as an image. OneShot is an app that tries to make that experience absolutely perfect.
I like this. It looks good.
Where you're on your iPhone or your iPad. You're looking at the thing that you want to quote. You just take a screenshot. Then you launch OneShot. It captures that most recent screenshot. It will do OCR on the contents of it and basically create a graphical quote from it. It would also then, because it's done OCR on all the text that's on that screenshot, it will then search the web and automatically generate the correct link. If it's spotted it more than one place, we'll give you, do you want it to link to this New York Times site thing, this thing on Gawker, or do you want it to this quote on Engadget? Formats it nicely. You can choose the font. You can choose the text color. You can even highlight text within it. And then because you've connected it to your Twitter account, you just press one button and it gets tweeted out as all in one thing. And you can add text to it. It really is, all of this happens within that one app. And it's so easy to use that this really is the way that you're going to want to like recommend articles online to other people. It's a free app because it was created by a couple of people who are veteran ex-Twitter staffers, and they just wanted to build something cool. And maybe they'll add features to it as they go along, but they really just wanted to write a really cool app for doing this sort of stuff. And I'll be darned, they absolutely did that. It's really, really fun to use.
Installing it right now.
Although, it's free.
It's so ironic because Twitter really made its bones because it was 140 characters. That's it.
It's the new tweet longer.
And now everybody is doing this, you know, workaround where you post pictures of much longer.
Because it's hard to like that's one of this. I will say that it's not like I spend as much time devising the tweet to a link of something that's just been posted on the Sun Times as I did writing the actual thing. But it's so hard within once the URL eats up some space, and after Nuance Sun Times eats up some space,
hashtags,
what remaining 11 words am I going to choose that convinces people this is going to be interesting enough that it's going to be worth your linking? And it's so cool, like whether I'm linking to my own stuff or other people's stuff, to simply say, here is the paragraph that said, oh, I gotta tweet this out. This is such a good article.
You know, it actually mirrors my workflow because when I go through news every day looking for stuff for this show and all the other shows, I will highlight, just as you did, the salient paragraph or one that I think is important. And then I use Pinboard to bookmark it and that paragraph gets copied over. So, and by the way, that Twitter feed is links_4_twit. I often use Twitter to do that. I might start doing that with links_4_twit because
I really hope that if I have a request before they move on to the Android version of this, if they want to port it to other things, I hope they do it as a Chrome plugin because I do so much of my morning and afternoon reading on Chrome. And for the thing that I tweeted out this morning, it was a really cool article about a digital security summit, top secret at Bletchley Park, between government spy agencies and representatives from Apple and Google and stuff like that. And I thought it was such a good article. I so wanted to tweet it out that I actually turned away from my keyboard and picked up my iPhone because I wanted to use this really cool app to tweet it out and not cut and paste from this other thing.
You actually make an excellent point. This would be a very nice thing to have as a Chrome extension. Maybe
I would be using it like if it cost me 3 cents a try to use it, I would be using it all the time and I'd be billing about $15 a day, maybe.
Yeah, because but that's true.
Okay, maybe not that bad, but I'd be willing to spend money per use of it. That's what I'm trying to say.
We didn't talk about that story because I didn't really know what else to say. But the picture of the mansion is cool, where Apple and Google and GCHQ got together to plan our futures.
I understand the catering at that place is very, very good. They have those. It looks like a mini taco, but it's not a taco. It's actually a portobello mushroom sort of thing. With
now you're just dreaming.
What I'm doing is I'm quoting. I was at the launch event for the Asus Zenfone 2, and oh my god, the catering at this function. It was like first it was like lobster, and then the portobello mushroom thing, and then crab, and then like steak. And it was like, why, yes, sir. Keep the entire can of Dr. Pepper. Wow.
They know how to get those ink-stained wretches in line. Feed them.
They know that we need to economize at any place we can get free protein. We will show up for that event.
That's what Showstoppers learned long ago.
With Ziploc baggies.
All it takes is a chocolate fountain, and I'm there. Andy Yannacco, Chicago Sun-Times. That's where you'll find him. He is the king of Mac journalism and generally. I think. I can't wait to read your MacBook. So that'll be out tomorrow in the paper, but today online?
It should be out tomorrow. I've just given them about 3,300 words and a bunch of pictures. Right. I had it ready to go last week, to be frank. It was actually on WordPress, and then I took it back only because reading it after 2 days of not reading it was like, oh, here's a way that I should rewrite that introduction.
Always a good
Fortunately,
idea.
I don't have the responsibility that Renee has to be like news right. all the time. So that it's I that's why I have so much respect for what Renee does. It's like I cannot form a good, valuable piece of an opinionage on something on quick turnaround. It's like, let me think about it. Let me take a trip with something.
It's because you have the requirement for value that changes.
There's room in this world for both. We need you both. Absolutely. Just give me the bottom line, though. I can still cancel my MacBook order, should I?
The bottom line on it is that I don't think that there's another MacBook like it that is this good to travel with, because I took it on a couple of different trips.
That's what I want it for, yeah.
And that's where it really, really shines. I don't think there's another MacBook that requires so much adjustment, mostly because of the keyboard, which is not, to me, it's not a failure, but you do have to adjust to using this different keyboard.
Lisa said the same thing, yeah.
But at the end of the day, the bullet quote that I will probably quote with OneShot is that I do think it's the most exciting Mac that Apple's released in the past 3 to 4 years.
All right.
Just don't expect it to be a daily driver Mac. That's all.
No, it's for travel. It's a lightweight.
Also, for people, whether you're traveling, a 30-minute bike ride to the coffee shop in the morning, or 3,000 miles across the coast to a conference, it's not even close to the 11-inch MacBook Air. It's not even close to the 13-inch MacBook Air. It's better than both of those at that sort of thing. So if you have that specific need and you have $1,300 to spend on that, that's a good place to put that money.
Well, as you know, Lisa and I are going on our yearly vacation in about a month. We're going to on a river cruise, and I want to have something like for travel. That looks good. Yeah. That and a black Apple Watch would be
It's not just that. I mean, on top of it being really, really small, not to open a new discussion, but the ability to simply say, we talked about how bad battery life is on an Android phone. That's the reason why I have the 16,000 milliamp hour, like carton of cigarette sized Anker battery charger. And so when I plug that into the MacBook Air, you can charge it from this device and you can actually run it.
Wow.
The battery will not deplete. The internal battery on this MacBook will not deplete when it's plugged into a good high capacity battery. And so now you go from having 8 hours of battery life to having 17 hours of battery life. And that's like, oh, that's such a great travel.
I took it to show Georgia Leo, and she has the 11-inch Air, and she was upset first that it was smaller than the 11-inch, but then you open it, and the screen has as many pixels as the 13-inch, and it's another one of those optical illusions. It's just amazing.
It's like a TARDIS.
I always thought the 11-inch screen was very, very weird. I could never get used to the fact that it's squatter, and also the fact that not only is it squatter and smaller, but it also has that. That's the one screen that I really can't work with, because I think that 13 inches is the minimum size for a non-retina screen, or at least for me to be comfortable using it. And that's why I think that it's even better than the 11-inch, even though it's credible to ask, well, why not get the 11-inch MacBook Air, because it'll have standard ports and has a better keyboard and it has equally as good battery life. Again, if you have the extra $400 to spend on this, I do think that it's a better solution.
I agree with Andy.
And best yet, with a nice black.
My God, Renee, we should start a podcast or a website together.
A space black.
We'll call it I Agree with Andy.
Apple Watch. This would work so well.
We'll have that sort of calligraphy where it means the same whether you're turning it upside down. I agree with Renee.
I did order the gold MacBook. Maybe I should just get the gold watch to go with it.
Black and gold look good together too, Leo.
Oh, yeah, good. Thank you. Dodge that bullet. Renee Ritchie,
This is like every YouTube video where it's like, oh my God, no, you could totally jump over that running car. You should totally do that.
It's the jackass of Mac podcast.
Jeff. It's the most expensive Mac break ever, Leo.
Oh no, not by a long shot. I believe I ordered a Mac Pro on the Mac break.
Well, just if we get you up to the $10,000 watch.
Then you would be, yeah. Renee Ritchie, love you. Great to have you. iMore.com. And so glad to have Mike Hurley here. Come back soon, Relay.fm.
I will.
We do Mac Break Weekly. A little programming note. We got some changes coming up. We got a new website launching. I'm hoping, if all goes right, and I feel good, Monday, June 1st. At that time, we're going to make some changes to how we do the live stream. In the past, for the last 8 years, we have operated with unprecedented openness. I have allowed everybody to watch how we do the shows, all watching the sausage being made, and I really love doing that. It's something that's been great for me, and it probably would if it were just me. Continue. Unfortunately, there are some real harassers out there who have given us a very hard time and used our live stream to do so. And it's not just me; it affects my family. my kids, and all of our other hosts. So we have had, unfortunately, decided to stop the behind-the-scenes stream. That'll be effective June 1st as well. Now, what that means, it's not going to be a change for you. You'll still be able to watch the stream on our website, but what you'll be seeing is the final versions of the shows, the edited versions of the shows. And I'm sad to say no more behind-the-scenes stuff, because that's really what was providing them with ammunition. We will continue to give you live streaming during breaking news. It's going to be kind of like a regular television station where you're watching shows. They will now be on schedule. Leo time no longer will apply. We'll be able to put those shows out on a regular schedule so you know when to tune in. We'll have lots of small interstitial bits to pad, which is great. Gives us a chance to do some fun stuff. And breaking news will break in just as a television station wouldn't give you breaking news. The minute there is a car chase outside of One Infinite Loop, you will see it live from the Twit helicopter. You'll also get to see breaking news events like the Google I.O. and WWDC. We'll do those live, as always. But it also has an unfortunate side effect. One of the great things about doing live is interaction with our audience, the chat room. That has also been an attack vector for these bad actors. And unfortunately, we're going to discontinue that as well. And I feel like I hate to do this. And let me tell you, it's breaking my heart. But because I know our community, some of our community anyway, loves being in chat. But it's just, it's very hard on our moderators. You don't know the behind the scenes stuff they're doing. We have been able to keep chat pretty clean and good, but that's only by dint of extreme effort. And frankly, some personal sacrifice on the part of our chat mods. And I just can't let that continue. So we will discontinue the live chat as well. Telling you now so that those of us, and I say us in the community, can find another place to interact and hang out together, because I know it's really important to many of you to talk to each other in the chat, and I don't want you to stop doing that, and there are plenty of other chat places you can do that, but there will, irc.twit.tv server will be discontinued on June 1st, so just a little heads up on that one. Sorry to have to do that. I don't think it will impact almost all of our audience doesn't watch live. Those of you who download the shows, there will be absolutely no change to what you hear. In fact, I think it might even be better, because I noticed today I was paying a little more attention to what was going on, a little less to the chat room. Thank you, Andy, Renee. Thank you, Mike, for being here. Thanks to all of you. We will probably have a new schedule starting June 1st. We will continue to tape live, just for our hosts' information, at the same time, 11 a.m. Pacific. But generally speaking, it takes us maybe 2 or 3 hours to get the feed, the download out. We're going to readjust our stream schedule to match that so you can get the final produced version. So I would guess, and don't hold me to this, but we'll have a schedule published on the new site June 1st. But I would guess you'll be able to watch Mac Break Weekly. Its first run will be probably Tuesday evening, early evening sometime. Add 4 or 5 hours. We'll get you the details. But roughly, for all the shows, add 4 or 5 hours to guarantee that we have a produced version available for download. And the first live feed of it will be on the Twit Network. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time. And, oh, one other thing, very important. Somebody asked me on Twitter, and I absolutely want you to know this. We welcome live studio audiences. We'll continue doing that. So if you want to watch live, and those guys get to see all the weird stuff like my Michael Jackson shoes collection, you can go to tickets@twit.tv, email us, and we'd love to have you. We'd love to host you live in our studios in Petaluma. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Remember, something important. Oh, get back to work. Break time is over. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.